Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, what do you say we start with some funny tonight? And you know, it's in the nature of humor, something of which I've made a lifelong study, although not a lifelong success. It's in the nature of humor that it's funniest when the person being funny don't know he's being funny. So this is one of those cases. And as is so often the case in politics, if you want funny without realizing they're being funny, rather akin to, say, John Stewart pointing out Texas Representative Louie Gohmert having a snack while talking about the coming apocalypse that will arise as a result of trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York City, I have another offering. Out in Mormon land, otherwise known as the state of Utah, remember the state that had to outlaw bigamy in order to become a state. Yeah, that Utah. They have... golly, Ned, this is just too beautiful. They have a state senator out there named Chris Butters. And Chris Butters, and that's Butt-A-R-S, B-U-T-T-A-R-S, Chris Butters... don't like the gay people much. He has described... this guy apparently has a talent. One, I don't know, maybe the angel Morani gave it to him or something. He has a talent for saying things like... recently he said that gay men and women are, and this is a quote, the greatest threat to America going down... Yeah, really. I mean, and that's just one of them. He said, I believe they will destroy the foundation of the American society. In my mind, it's the beginning of the end. Sodom and Gomorrah was localized. This is worldwide. And he can't explain that verse from Ezekiel that says that the real reason Sodom was destroyed was because of its want of human decency in terms of how it treated strangers. Last year, State Senator Chris Butters drew the ire of decent human beings when he spoke of a controversial bill thusly, this baby is black, I'll tell you. This is a dark and ugly thing. Don't know what cave State Senator Chris Butters lives in, but he can always be counted on to satisfy. You know the old some of my best friends are fill in the blank here with the name of whatever hated group you hate the most. Some of my best friends are. Well, this is one of those. And like I said, there's nothing like starting Front Porch on the Friday with a funny. Sit down. Strap in.
I meet with the gays here and there. They're in my house 2 weeks ago. I don't mind gays, but I don't want them stuffing it down my throat all the time, and certainly in my kid's face.
No, of course not. Of course not. I meet with the gays here and there.
Minneapolis airport restroom, perhaps, Senator Butters?
Nah. They were in my house 2 weeks ago. I don't mind gays, but I don't want them stuffing it down my throat all the time. Certainly not in my kid's face. I'll bet you this guy's a teabagger.
Ooh, that was too easy.
No, so, I mean, just a giggle. Just a giggle. It doesn't really matter. You remember last night when I opened the program talking about this, these revised recommendations by the Federal Preventive Services Task Force about mammograms? And I said, you know, there's just some things I wish it didn't happen at the timing that it happens with, and you know, we could do without this. Well, prophecy update. You know, that's the trouble with prophecy. You never, even if you've got your worn-out purple robe with the frayed cuffs and the half-dangling moons and stars around them and the eight ball with the crack in the bottom that persistently says, answer hazy, ask again later. Even if you've got all that, sometimes you don't exactly know the power of your prophecy, and such is the case with me. I found a post by our old buddy Jurassic Pork over at his blog, Welcome Back to Pottersville. That's welcomebacktopottersville.blogspot.com. And he's got a little bit of insight on one of the people who made that recommendation, you know, about mammography and breast examinations. And he notes that Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, came out and denounced the report. And a little bit of information in what Kathleen Sebelius said. The U.S. Preventative Task Force is an outside independent panel of doctors and scientists who make recommendations. They do not set federal policy, and they don't determine what services are covered by the federal government. My message to women is simple. Mammograms have always been an important life-saving tool in the fight against breast cancer, and they still are today. Keep doing what you've been doing for years. Talk to your doctor about your individual history, ask questions, and make the decision that is right for you. And so, up there in, I think, Massachusetts, where Jurassic Pork is, he did a little bit of what we like to call journalism and reporting on what just exactly this panel is. He says it has 16 members, two nurses, and a researcher. But of this 16-member panel, there is not one single oncologist. Not one. There is not anyone on this panel with a recorded history of ever having treated cancer. However, the panel does include what he refers to as the ironically named Dr. Diane Pettitte. Sorry. Oh, the 13-year-old juvenile sense of humor of my son has begun to rub off on me. Oh, please don't make me say that name again. Who is she? Besides having a really funny name. Oh, come on, Bob, quit being 13 again. You know, I read through this just fine a little bit ago. This didn't happen to me. Woo! Oh, I guess one of the reasons I'm laughing is because, she may be a doctor, and she may have an ironic name, but there's nothing ironic about where she comes from. Why, by God, she's a health policy and medical advisor for Kaiser Permanente in Southern California. She's an insurance flack! Oh, my God! Yeah, really. And so there it was last night, as I said, you know, I wish these things wouldn't come along, because you know out there that as quick as this thing came out, some insurance company was out there saying, well, we've got a good reason never to pay for one of those again. I'm not going to say her name again. She appeared on Diane Rehm's show on NPR, and Diane Rehm asked her straight up, as Jurassic Pork notes, how many oncologists were on the panel, and, well, the good doctor couldn't answer. So, there you have it. Lo and behold, it's not the government limiting access to diagnostic screenings. This is a recommendation from people associated with the avarice-driven health insurance industry. Well, bust my buttons. So, as Jurassic Pork notes, this panel of preventive medicine was acting largely, if not solely, in the interest of healthcare profits, and that's what makes this HHS-sponsored panel even more despicable. You know, some, and again, some percentage of that demographic that we talk about so often, the 45,000 Americans, conservatively estimated, who die every year for want of access to health care, die of breast cancer, just as some percentage die of heart disease. And they so die because they never had health insurance and did not have access to any kind of diagnostic or preventative medicine. And no, going to the emergency room doesn't count. Gets a little tiresome, doesn't it? As Jurassic Pork notes, Molly Ivins, liberal icon and one of the greatest political journalists of our time, said just before her own death of breast cancer, quote, "Get the damned test done." And you know what? I will gladly trust someone like Molly Ivins far ahead of some ironically named flack doctor from an insurance provider. But that's okay. We understand now that this is not actually a government agency, right? Right. Well, there are those who don't understand that this isn't really a government agency. You remember Representative Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, the one whose assistant sent out the photograph of Barack Obama that was nothing but a black field with two round white eyes in it? Yeah, that Marsha Blackburn. No, that wasn't Marsha Blackburn. I'm sorry, my bad. It was a different right-wing, hate-filled white woman from Central Tennessee. No. Marsha Blackburn is basically Michelle Blackburn. Marsha Blackburn is Michelle Bachmann. You see how confusing it gets? Marsha Blackburn is Michelle Bachmann with a southern accent. And, of course, she has jumped all over the mammogram bandwagon and appeared on MSNBC this afternoon for a colloquy with Dr. Nancy Snyderman. Because Marsha Blackburn, R, dumb as a post, said, "This is how rationing begins. This is the little toe in the edge of the water." Then, of course, there was Michelle Bachmann. See, you know, where one is, the other ain't far. "Women in particular may lose a great deal of clout in decision-making," said Representative Michelle Bachmann. Crazy. "We don't know how far government will go on this bureaucracy. They want to empower women and want to have all the data on the table so individuals can make the best decision they can." Oh, do you now? Okie dokie. So anyway, with all that with that past as prologue, Representative Marsha Blackburn
I've got it right this time. Representative Marsha Blackburn showed up on MSNBC where Dr. Nancy Snyderman handed her her butt. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, the panel behind the new mammogram recommendations is looking to quell the fire, saying that the public health message has been lost in the politics. The task force, which is an independent body from the government and is made up of some of the most respected names in medicine, underscores that its guidelines are meant to open up conversations between doctors and their patients. Joining me now is Republican Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. And, Congresswoman, I want to thank you, first of all, for allowing me to...
Wow, another Republican woman with that 30-mile stare that just betrays the absence of anything going on behind them. Amazing. Nice dye job, though.
We had Beyond Nightly News as part of my package last night.
Absolutely. Thank you.
But I want to talk about the politics, because you really, you said something yesterday that took me aback, but I do think you've touched on a nerve, and that is this is a toe in the water of rationing. Now, there's nothing that came out of this panel recommending rationing, just a prudent use of screening tests. So why did you make one dot join another?
Yeah, and Nancy, I think that as people are looking at what is coming forward, this is what they need to do, is read the legislation. And the reason I'm concerned about rationing is because...
This wasn't legislation, this was a task force. Don't let the facts get in the way of her pig-licking ideology, Dr. Snyderman. Come on.
But let me stop you for a second.
You're correct. Let me make the connection there, though. But I've read the bill, and I know what is in the bill, and I know you can go into this legislation, whether it is the House bill or the Senate bill, and there is a direct link
What came out Monday was an independent panel of experts looking at epidemiology and how we screen. And this is a panel that has put out guidelines for prostate cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, and then everything blew up on Monday. They may be politically naive, but they are no more a part of this health care reform bill than I am.
Well, the problem is the legislation that we have had before us, H.R. 3962 in the House, and also the bill that is going through the Senate, Senator Reid's bill, does embrace this. And, Nancy, this is the way it works.
Embrace what? Sorry.
Would work. This panel is noted in that legislation, and there is a name change from the prevention issues panel to the clinical services panel, and those guidelines will be taken into effect to set the standard for what the federal government will provide. And it even states in that legislation that it would be required, insurance plans would be required to offer this. Now, the bills that are before us are going to be, you're going to have 118 new bureaucracies, you're going to have a health choices commissioner who is going to lay out new directives.
But Congresswoman, in all due respect, now you're talking apples and oranges, because what I'm really talking about are guidelines. And Congress sticks its policies and guidelines all the time. But someone else who you serve with, Representative Rosa DeLauro, who's a Democrat from Connecticut, has released this statement. She said, if we can cut through the Republicans' political gamesmanship on this issue, the new breast cancer recommendations, as always, were an attempt to put the best possible evidence in the hands of women and their doctors so they can assess their own risk and benefit. Isn't that the core of it? I want you to be smart. You want me to be smart. We want to have those conversations with our physicians, but we don't want to impair scientists from moving the science forward.
You're correct. And it is troubling also that another of our colleagues has said many times, we, and that we means bureaucrats deciding what
bureaucrats.
They're going to allow.
You're my bureaucrat.
But I'm not. No, and see, I don't think a bureaucrat should be between a patient and a doctor. See, I don't want to be that
excuse
bureaucrat.
Excuse me, I think that's exactly where you are right now.
I don't want anybody in Washington to be that. No, I'm not. I'm a politician. policymaker, and I'm going to keep that bureaucrat away from telling a physician what that individual can have. I think that doctors and patients make those decisions, and we want women to be informed. We want all patients to be informed and be able to have those decisions made with their physicians, regardless of whether they're under 40, whether they're 40 to 49, whether they are 50 to 59, or above 75.
You know what? It's Friday, and I'm in a really benevolent mode, so I'm going to let you even have the last word on that one. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn.
Ho, ho, ho. They don't want to get between a woman and her doctor or the decisions that the doctor makes, unless the decision-making happens to involve the woman making decisions about her reproductive organs. And then Marsha Blackburn wants to jump right in there. Ooh, I'm going to save the little blastocyst. Ooh. See, this is another one of those lightning bolt moments. Just no more Marsha Blackburn. Liar. Hypocrite. Little smoking grease spot, you know, just because, you know, the lightning bolt throwing juvenile delinquent in the sky just over. I don't want to be that bureaucrat. I'm not that bureaucrat. And yet how many times has Marsha Blackburn opined about the precious little fetuses? One way or the other, Marsha, you can't have it both. Otherwise your thin little skull will just crack right beneath that lovely blonde dye job and it'll just be messy all over TV. And never did mention that one of the central figures on that panel is a flack for the insurance industry. The government will pay for mammograms. The government will continue to pay for mammograms if we had universal single-payer health care. It's the insurance companies we have to worry about, with the, you know, some little Eichmann in a cubicle somewhere figuring that if she denies Mrs. Smith's mammogram, that's going to be another $32 on her Christmas bonus. Ooh, I can buy half a ham with that. Never mind what happens to Mrs. Smith. I mean, it's about the bonus. Because this is profit-driven. Remember from last night, 21% of all insurance claims filed in the state of California were denied by the avarice-driven healthcare insurance industry? Remember that? Of course, of course. I had no idea, but I sort of did. Oh, I think we're going to have a very interesting evening from Senator Butters, who just can't help but remind me of a character from South Park, and the new billboard out in Missouri. Seen this? The Lafayette County, Missouri Republican Central Committee is just proud as punch of a new billboard out there in the Show Me State. And it has steps for a citizen's guide to revolution of a corrupt government. That's what the billboard says. A citizen's guide to revolution of a corrupt government. To the right of that, three steps. One, starve the beast. Keep your money. Two, vote out incumbents. Three, if steps one and two fail, big red banner at the bottom of the billboard, prepare for war, live free or die. This is just one in a series of billboards. A previous one warned that the socialist Obama nation is coming for you. The only thing that can be found out is that a Missouri businessman has paid for the billboard. Or at least paid for the first one. Missouri businessman. Wait a minute. Flush Flemball is from Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
prepare for war, live free or die. Who do they think they're going to kill? Because if it's a war, I mean, you can't have a war that doesn't involve killing. That's part of the long-term objection to things to phrases like a war on poverty or a war on drugs. Sooner or later, we have to get away from the theming things as wars. Because as long as a war is the answer, then the outcomes will eventually be the same. We have a war on drugs. We have dead people. Lots of them. And we have innocent victims cast by the wayside. Prepare for war. Live free or die. If they found out, these wing nuts, if they found out that their neighbor happened to have voted for Barack Obama, would that slate them for execution under the whatever the rules of war are for these right-wing, bloodthirsty monsters? Because the rules are there. Starve the beast, keep your money. Wow, that's amazing. The government of we the people is now a beast. And of course, step one in any war is to dehumanize the enemy so that killing them becomes not only acceptable, but desirable. If steps one and two fail, prepare for war. Live free or die. You know, I spent a couple of years in Missouri. It was a lovely time of my life. Learned a lot, made a lot of friends. But I don't know how I'd feel about living in Missouri right now. I know we've got listeners there. If you had to drive by this thing every day, how would you feel? What would it make you think? Would it make you want to stop at the gun store on the way home and pick up a couple of AR-15s and a few thousand rounds of ammunition? Or would you simply shake your head and say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do? I don't know what my response would be. I know that living where I live, we are gun-owning mean liberals. But the fact of the matter is, they got a lot more, their side has a lot more than our side does. Remember, we bring tambourines to knife fights. They've got the crazier than a sprayed roach Michelle Bachmann out there saying that she wants people to go to the barricades and lock and load and prepare to kill people over climate change legislation. The eliminationism is all over this country. We've already we've talked for two evenings running about Psalm 109:8 and the question of whether or not there is an advocacy of murder involved with that verse, especially in light of what Psalm 109:9 says. And then again, this billboard is another case of code. Starve the beast, keep your money. So is this person, whoever owns this billboard, are they advocating that people commit crimes? Because, you know, the paying your income tax is kind of legal. I mean, it's not optional. Where was this billboard during the 8 long, tormented, tortured years of the Bush administration when our children and our children's children's futures were being mortgaged on the blood-soaked sands of Iraq and Afghanistan? That's what I don't get about these people. We have a saying around hereabouts and around the South and maybe elsewhere, just haven't been there yet. Them people could swallow a mountain and gag on a gnat. And they did. They swallowed the mountain with Iraq and Afghanistan and the humongous tax giveaways to Bush's cronies. What did he call them? The haves and the have-mores. but they are gagging on the gnat of their neighbor being able to go to the hospital without fear of being crushed by debt when the chest pains begin or when the coughing of blood begins. Or maybe even of going to the doctor for preventive care so that that day does not dawn. That they're willing to kill over. Live free or die. They think that they're not free if America gets to have medical care. They think that they're not free if 45,000 more Americans continue to live every year than currently die under the system that they define as freedom. I had to be in Charleston today, so I got to listen to a little bit of the local version of Wingnut Radio. We have a character in this state by the name of Hoppy Kercheval, and he does a statewide talk show from 10 to noon every day, and it is nothing but 2 hours of uninterrupted right-wing blather. And he had some goober on from Washington, D.C. to talk about how health care is not a right. Not the way that the American people define a right. And this goober, I think his name was Steyerwalt, and he writes for something called the Washington Examiner, which I suspect is a right wing scandal sheet. And he said the framers of the Constitution told us what our rights were. They defined the rights, and they got it pretty good. And I'm just got a white-knuckle death grip on the truck steering wheel trying to keep it on the road when I'm thinking, really? Really? They got it pretty close to right, Chris? They did? They got it pretty close to right when they defined the citizenship as being comprised, and the right to vote as being comprised of white people who owned property. They got it pretty close to right. Wow! The sheet is off. And nary a mention of the general welfare clause of the Constitution. Or the congressional power to tax for that purpose. Not a mention. Boop, nothing. No mention of the fact that there was no right to vote for women. No mention of the fact that the law was not deemed to extend to the states so that the Bill of Rights existed, but the states didn't have to afford the same rights, which thereby made the rights themselves rather ineffective. Nope, not there. No mention that the framers did not include anything in the Constitution about slavery and that that had to be taken care of by a little 5-year-long dust-up that cost a couple of 100,000 lives. Nope. If you're a right-winger, you get to live in this fantasy world where Ward Cleaver was the president of the Constitutional Convention. And just designed a perfectly lovely, white little world that's being so messed up now by the liberals. Yeah. So that's what I think we've got in store. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg for this Friday on the front porch. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck and don't want to go to the toll-free route, you can dial direct. 304-658-3333. All the phone calls wind up in the same place, so it makes no matter to me. As long as we engage in the conversation this evening, because after all, no more conversation till Sunday, when All Fox Up with John Fox comes your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's go to the phones and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well, let's see. Let's start off with, did you read Mr. Lyons' column this week?
No, I did not. I've been running around quite a bit.
Well, his one this week had to do with, is Isn't it amazing how they're wanting to complain about how much this is going to cost? But you know what? They can always seem to find the money to have a war. But you know what? We want to help people and all that, but oops, can't afford that. But you want to go kill people? We'll find the money. Don't you worry.
Yeah, we'll look. Yeah, there's always money for murder.
Oh, yeah. Have you had a chance to look at the Lou Dobbs interview from Jon Stewart?
No.
Okay, if you get a chance, that is enjoyable. He a couple times had Lou where he just had that sort of blank look on his face, like he didn't know where to go. But, good one. Have you seen this thing that Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck are going to do this thing called the Bold and Fresh Tour?
Bold and Fresh?
Oh, yeah. And they're going to do some random things. And I was just sitting there going, I just have this image of a black helicopter flying over top of it and the door on the back open and Luther's coming out the back. And then when they question somebody, what we do is we get the old tape from WKRP Cincinnati of Gordon Jump. He goes, Travis, God is my witness, I thought Luther could fly.
And it will be time for that. It's that time of year, time to run the WKRP Thanksgiving turkey drop.
But actually, that's just, I just thought of that. I was just sitting there because somebody said, you warm up the black helicopters. I said, how much would it charge just to have a black helicopter just fly around for an hour over top of them? Not doing anything, not trail a banner or anything, just flying around in a circle.
Yeah. Of course, they'd start shooting.
I know. Well, we did find out one thing this week. The word inadvertently will do anything for you. It's the magic word now that we see faux noise. Does it twice in 10 days. And amazingly enough, that damn tape machine apparently has a mind of its own.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
It's attached to a computer with an AI. It's thinking on itself, yes.
And, you know, whenever they mention health care or Washington, D.C., it just automatically pulls up footage of Glenn Beck's rally or 2008 file footage of Sarah Palin on the campaign trail. You know, whatever.
Well, it's the same thing that, you know, whenever, you know, when they had Mark Foley or... The one out in Utah, I can't think of his name.
Right, where it would say D.
Where they're D all of a sudden. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's the, that's an expensive piece of equipment. That's a D generator that attaches to one's chiron, Luke.
I know, isn't that incredible? Every time one of them gets in some usually sexual trouble, all of a sudden they become Democrats. Amazing. Oh, one thing from a couple weeks ago, and I'm bringing it up real quick. Did you ever get a chance to look at the landslide video from down Chattanooga?
Yes.
Now, that was just dumb luck they were there. You know what I mean? They got that picture.
True enough. Yeah, that's
like with your people from up the Cold River Mountain, they ought to show that and say, here's what the whole world's going to be like soon. So with these guys blowing up hillsides, that you're going to start seeing more and more hills just letting go. You know, God.
Well, you know, they're blasting right next to a toxic waste impoundment that's certified for 9.8 billion gallons. It's sitting on top of dig this. I mean, pretend for a moment you're an engineer, okay? And, you know, you've got your little pocket protector and your reverse Polish notation square root calculator and all of that stuff. And you have engineered a toxic waste dam for 9.8 billion gallons of murderous toxic waste, and you've sited it on top of an area that has been undermined in excess of 50 years, where the old mines are already full of water themselves, where the pillars inside the mines have already eroded, collapsed, and given away. And now... And in your reporting, you've said, listen, if the dam ever gives way, 998 people are dead. I mean, that's just at least. I mean, that just, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And then your boss says, you know what I want to do? I want to start setting off below ground high explosive charges within 200 feet of all this. If you live below that dam, how good can you feel about that?
That's what we're saying. Fine. If you can start doing that, you're going to start living down here with us.
Yeah.
We'll get you a house. We'll set it up here, but you're going to live here.
And you know what's right at the foot of all that?
That school?
No, this is a different impoundment. This is a different toxic waste lake.
Sorry.
The town of Whitesville, among other things, is right below this thing. But in the immediate path, the instant that it breaks, some of those 988 almost instantaneous deaths, Luke, are a Head Start Center. And let's see, who's really handy to have in a disaster? First responders, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Whitesville Detachment of the West Virginia State Police goes next.
Oh, Lordy.
And the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection, said, cool by us. We're not at the foot of that damn thing. See, what we made a funny damn thing, damn her.
Another one to bring up for the fun. Did you see the thing that apparently down in Texas, the Texas people, the right-wingers who are out against gay marriage may have shot themselves in a place they don't want to think about?
Yeah, they done turned themselves all into sin livers because they're living in sin.
I'm sitting there going, you know, if I'm the people out in California, I'm thinking about running, about let's try that next time. Let's see if we can put that through. It sounds just ambiguous enough where they, you could probably convince those people out there that voted for Proposition 8 this is a good thing. You know.
Yeah, because what's that language? Marriage,
similar.
Actual marriage or anything similar. That means they whacked common law marriage, and they whacked the thing that the Justice of the Peace does, and they whacked the thing that happens in the First Baptist Church and Herpetological Seminary.
You betcha. Yeah, well, that's what I said, you know, when they first were doing that thing for when they were doing Prop 8. That's what I suggested. I said what you ought to do out there is get them to run, make Prop 88 and put one in to outlaw heterosexual marriage. See how many of them vote for that?
No. What you do is you go after divorce.
Ah. Divorce is now illegal.
Yep.
Oh, that would do it. One other. Apparently, one of the things over at Kristen Liars, they have this thing with Elizabeth Hasselbeck was on Sean Hannity's show talking about she was happy they waterboarded him. So they just chucked some water on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And then Hannity said, I'm glad we waterboarded him. And I'm still sitting there going, isn't that the thing up there where Hannity was supposed to get waterboarded himself to prove it wasn't torture?
Yeah, not so much.
You can't seem to remember that one.
But they don't pay off on bets. They fudge on their bets. You know, Hannity made a bet about waterboarding, but then Bill O'Reilly made a bet about Senor Dobbs, didn't he?
Yeah, Dobbs quit. He paid, $10,000 or something?
Yeah. Or if Dobbs was fired.
Was fired over immigration. Something like that, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still no check.
Okay, I know. Well, one thing I saw a minute ago, looking through the thing, was over CQ Politics. That freshman Senator Al Franken has lined up behind State Senator Terrell Clark in the Democratic primary to take on Republican Michelle Bachmann.
Hot damn.
Well, you know the guy that ran against her last time and almost beat her, apparently he decided he wasn't going to run. So apparently they found somebody else up there to run against her. Hallelujah.
And he came close enough to beat me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he came within, I think, 2 or 3 points. I mean, it was really close. Of course, could be like that old boy at New York. Is he unconceded again?
No, he has unconceded.
You gotta keep the scorecard to keep it straight which one it is this week.
Well, it's like algebra after a while, you know. If you're adding negatives, it's like subtracting, but if you're multiplying negatives, everything comes out positive. I still can't remember it all.
Well, you saw the new one, did you? Now they're getting Republicans are all claiming that Obama was not legally elected, that Acorn stole it for him.
Oh, please.
That's new storyline that you'll start seeing, I'm sure, at the next teabagging convention. But you'll have that up there on a sign. Of course, it may be a sign from a year ago, but still.
But interesting, you would mention the teabaggers. A little story out there that is suggesting that as quickly as it formed, the teabaggers are already kind of falling apart.
Oh, yeah.
A Politico story saying that, and this is a quote, the Tea Party movement has become so rife with internal feuding over philosophy, strategy, and money that some supporters fear it will disintegrate before realizing its full potential. I don't exactly know what Politico means by its full potential. I mean, are we talking here about the armed revolution on the billboard?
I'm thinking self-immolation, but that's just me, you know. But you saw the thing the other day where they've been talking about the fact that over beautiful Fox, Illinois, that apparently Bill O is really ticked because Sean Hannity, where he got like one interview with Sarah Palin. Sean Hannity got one for like three nights in a row. And apparently his numbers are higher than O'Reilly's. But we may be seeing some blood on the carpet.
Well, but then again, you got to remember that O'Reilly's demographic, or shall we say psychographic.
5 to dead?
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, O'Reilly's demographic consists entirely of Fred Thompson.
Well,
who, by the way, has declared that we have lost the war in Afghanistan, Luke.
I know. Hey, it's like I say, we think Fred's slipping down the hill. You know how that is. It's, you know, once the mind starts to go with Fred, it's just, you know.
Oh, truly, he is half dead Fred.
He's going to replay Red October again, you know?
Yeah, pretty soon he'll be like Ronnie Reagan, where he couldn't tell the difference between his film roles and his real life.
Yeah, I was at the concentration camp. No, that was a movie set you were on, Ronnie. Like Ronnie, you have to have somebody around. That's what that person was. It's a continuity person's for, to tell you what reality and fantasy are.
Yeah, precisely.
Somebody like that full time with you to remind you which is which. You know, it's just one of the things sometimes with some of these people, you just sit there and going, do you ever read a paper, or is all you do just look at the headlines and go with it, figure you already know what the story is? You know, because a lot of these things, you know what I mean, like you said, that thing, the thing you played there a little while ago with Marcia.
See, you can't keep them straight either. I don't feel so bad now.
It's like I say, they're interchangeable. It's we got away from
brunette crazy and blonde crazy.
Well, brunette crazy, but think of it. You remember 10 years ago, it was insert blonde. Which one you wanted?
Yeah,
you had about 8 or 9 of them. That, like I say, you couldn't tell them apart without a program. You know, they've always been like that. You know, stick one in here, here, talk. They're going to, you don't know who, which one it is. So you start wearing the damn name tags again. But you know, it's one of those things where sometimes where you just want to go. You know, it's like we were playing that thing. I had to put the phone down. I'm sitting there going, every time I listen to Marcia or Michelle, I feel my IQ points dropping.
Well, the only, here's how I've figured out how to keep them separate, Luke.
Okay.
If you hear them, and if she sounds like she works for Land's End, it's Michelle.
Okay. Yeah.
If she sounds like she works for Cracker Barrel,
it's
Marcia.
But you know, but like I say, it is one of those things. Like I say, if we got rid of the two of them, so help me, they have two more, I'm sure, prepped and ready to go. You know what I mean? It's just interchangeable.
And I know it's probably irresponsible of me, but I am not that good at the identification of the nuance of crazy. So. Blackburn, it doesn't help that they both begin with B.
Well, see, that's what I mean.
Hey, that's what they are. They're the Republican Party B girls.
Uh-huh. You know what it is? It's the Stepford Wife theory. They're being made. Somebody in the laboratory is turning them out. But, you know, I heard recently, was it true that Michelle was about to get in maybe some legal trouble with the House because she tried to claim this was a press conference, but the press wasn't allowed to question anything, so it wasn't a press conference. She had her little thing a couple of weeks ago. Because apparently you're not allowed to use government, like her mailing and all that, for a rally. You can for a press conference, but apparently not for a rally.
Oopsie.
Yeah. It was some legal thing, and they were trying to. That's why they were claiming it was a press conference. That's why when you see her talk about it, that's what they were claiming.
Well, did you? And speaking of press conferences, did you notice that there won't be one when Bible Spice visits Fort Bragg?
Oh yes.
I mean that thing's clamped downer than tighter than a Bush era military funeral.
Well, did you see the one today? The one I saw just a minute ago just blew my mind. Was apparently Tweety Bird opened his yap. And Tweety Bird was saying how he thought Barack Obama was too cerebral, too highbrow. And I'm sitting there going, dummy, this is what gave you presidents too stupid to eat a pretzel. You know, I want a bookworm. I want a wonk. I don't want the average guy on the, because I've seen him. We've had him for 8 years. We don't want him back. It's like any time.
Yeah, I had enough. Thanks.
It's like I still say whoever they run, if they run somebody like that in 2012, I still say the biggest piece put out a commercial, 30 seconds, and just put up W's picture. So if you want to go back to this, just let it run for 30 seconds.
And then, I still say 2012, there's I give better than 50-50 odds that Jebby runs.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens in 2010. I think that'll tell us what happens. But it's one of those things where I tell you what, we need to start beating the bushes. And start telling the people.
It's never a bad time to beat the bushes.
I know, but you'll be out true enough. But
sorry, you can't hang one up over the rim without me jumping.
No, it's too easy. But you know what I mean. It's one of those things where you got to sit back and just kind of go. You know, if you don't keep pushing to 2010, they're going to think they can come back in 2012. You got to keep them down. You can't give them a chance. You know, it's the old thing. If you leave them around, they'll come back and beat and bite you in the ass eventually. Oh.
Yes.
Sports question.
Yes.
Just throw it in a different direction for 5 seconds before I leave. We honestly thought UNC Asheville had a team for basketball.
Really?
Well, I mean, I swear they played what we've seen them play before, and they could play. They scored their first goal with 3 seconds to go, 3 minutes to go with the first half.
Oh, I know. It was.
That was one of the ones you're just like, please don't let them come back to the second half, please.
Yeah, just run the clock off and send everybody home and holler free beer.
You know, go get on the bus. We'll go fine. Thank you. Have a good time.
Well, you know, I kind of watched the last of any kind of hopes for the Mountaineers go bye-bye last Friday night. So.
Well, we're just hoping we win two more. We can get a.
Well, you know where I find myself, Luke? And this is a sad place to be. Anytime you're a fan of a particular college program, or perhaps professional as well. But I find myself honestly hoping that my beloved Mountaineers lose these last two games.
I understand.
That will finish us fourth or fifth place in the Big East. You know, we might qualify for the Where the Hell Are We Going Bowl.
That Fulon Weed Eater Bowl still out there?
Or the Bob and Doug McKenzie Great White North Bowl, something like that.
Oh, the Humanitarian Bowl. Go up and play on the blue carpet.
Yeesh. we'd be like, if we wear our home unis, we'd just be slightly darker spots on the carpet.
Hey, I think I may have told you this before. We're just so glad that Doug Dickey didn't know you could get artificial turf in colors.
Well, you know, but you got the checkerboards in the end zone.
Well, I mean, we can live with that. I mean, that's not bad. But dear God, he would have had an orange field one end to the other. You'd had to wear sunglasses. Just
well, you know, I mean, if you cut him, he did, you know, volunteer orange after. But,
well, I know.
But, I mean, he was from all over before he got there. But he was a genius for what he did.
But like I say, we'll
see. But the Mountaineers are done. I mean, let's just be clear. We are done. Stick a fork in us. Turn us over. We're done. 2 years in a row with this fundamentalist coach of ours. You know, he may have 14 convictions, but I think if he accepts Jesus Christ as his personal Lord and Savior, he can be a fine punt returner.
Well, like I say, we've got two more to go. We get to play the boys from over in the middle of the state, and then we get to
The Commodores, or I mean Commodores.
Yep.
Yes.
And we get to go up. And then next weekend, we get to go up play in the beautiful bluegrass state.
Yeah, well, sadly, you know, I just hate to see what happened to Vandy. They had that little you know uptick, and then it just went.
I know. Well, like I said, they actually found a quarterback who knew what to do with the ball. We didn't get the ball. And go. What is this?
Two games, and you know, there's a bowl game out there, I think.
All right, bud, I'm gonna let you go on. I'll get up.
All right, take care, Luke. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now. And rolling onward, as we're about 6 minutes before the hour of 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, how are you, buddy?
How are you? I gotta take a note. I thought Missouri's most famous state motto was the Show Me State, and the great Harry Truman that came from there. They always wanted the facts. He got the facts about the war profiteers of World War II, and he prosecuted them. He didn't aid and give them comfort the way their Republican hero did, George W. Bush, for 8 years. And I want to take, I take offense that they're using our New Hampshire's live free or die.
Yeah, that is yours, isn't it?
Yes,
is there anything a right winger won't steal?
Yeah. And, but the, these phony, this phony freedom lovers, the phony SOBs, the so-and-sos, they're a lot like the damn New Hampshire libertarians up here that, up here, the one big tax that we have property taxes. They're too high in this in the town of Raymond, New Hampshire, for my, I say, but I pay them for my old mobile home on its little lot of land here. It's a lot, but I pay them. But we have all these libertarians. All they want the school vouchers. They want the charter schools. They want huge tax breaks. I'm a mentally ill guy. You listen to my phone calls. You know, I'm probably never going to be normal enough to ever have a kid of my own in the public school systems of Raymond or of New Hampshire. So, you know, and yet I'm not asking for any school voucher. You know, I'm not asking for any 50% cut of my taxes. That's about the percentage.
No, you're not trying to bow out of the social contract of which you are a part.
It's called civilization. That taxes are a part of that, but Republicans get to launch their wars. They get to allow the September 11th attacks. They get to allow the Katrina victims and let the profiteering private, quote-unquote, contractors clean up after the mass death of those conflagrations. We've got all the asbestos, et cetera, those released into the air. We've got hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers that could eventually have their lives cut short from the air in New York City after the September 11th attacks and those asbestos lakes, Twin Towers, et cetera, and the entire World Trade Center. This, under the Bush administration, these people are phonies, phony like this Ron Paul and Alex Jones. I can't believe these phony so-called constitutionalists. And this Ron Paul, who never, ever signed on. He's a fellow member of Congress. He never signed off with Dennis Kucinich, his fellow Congress member, and Dennis Kucinich's great 35 articles of patriotic impeachment against G.W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Paul never signed on to that. But
no.
The same kind of skinflints that we get stuck with him. Apparently Missouri's infested with him, too.
Well, you know what, Brian? I'll tell you a little secret here. I get, in the course of doing this program, I get offers to have guests on the program.
Okay.
And
the doctor last night, that was interesting.
Yeah, wasn't she fascinating? And,
yeah.
and just a sweet person too. I mean,
I'm a too much type A, obviously.
yeah. You're one of the people.
I love my dad, World War II hero, and almost as decorated as Audie Murphy in World War II, Italy, America's last good war. But I've got the type A too much. I don't have my mother's calming enough of that. That mature.
Yeah, you're one of the people that she's talking to, Brian.
I know she is.
I get these pitches for interviewing people, and I actually got a pitch the other day offering me Ron Paul.
I
I had to patiently explain because this person is rather persistent in the way that guests are pitched. And I just had to put my foot down. And you know what I said, Brian? I said, listen, we have created a little haven here where we don't have to hear right-wing garbage. And I said, our listeners support this effort with their hard-earned cash.
Right.
And I will not spit on that and the sacrifices made to keep this going by giving up 1 minute of this network's time for the libertarian garbage that is routinely spewed by that old racist Ron Paul.
Gets right to my point. He had a storm front there, that Nazi group that supported him. He never gave back the $500 or gave.
No, he did not.
Did not to the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. He never, or any African American educational, fund or whatever. But that gets right to your point. His fellow, Ron Paul's fellow libertarian and close libertarian, Ayn Rand following zealot nutcase, Alan Greenspan, was the head of the Fed during this disastrous time that drove us into what became the 2008 economic meltdown. And Alan Greenspan, he was picked by Ronald Reagan to be his economic advisor, and he instituted with his committee there, his commission, the biggest tax increase in American history, the Social Security FICA tax increase. And under Ronald Reagan, gets away with, well, I never raised taxes on anyone. He gets away with that crap. And Alan Greenspan gets to play both sides of the thing with his free market, Ayn Randian, social Darwinistic crap, and yet he gets away with the biggest tax increase in American history. and he gets away with it. He gets, you know, the tax cuts are good on the G.W. Bush, and G.W. Bush can go ahead and steal the annual Social Security trust funds. American workers owe nearly $3 trillion of it. The ultimate taxation without representation in American history, I would say. And these phonies like Ron Paul, this phony constitutionalist, he's a close friend of him and the guy from Overstock.com who loves Ron Paul. He's gotten into some severely illegal business deals, even during the Bush, George Bush non-acting securities and exchange.
Right, and yeah, how screwed up do you have to be? Right.
He's on Wall Street that Ron Paul's very close to. That he's very close to them. And the people in Missouri, I gotta put it in the one people, they also gotta leave out the one people that are great, like my own Irish ancestors, Scottish ancestors, but the great French American, there's a large Franco-American community here in this great state of New Hampshire in the Granite State, and in the French language I can tell these teabaggers in Missouri and there's phony revolution, what I think of them, and it's say far Republican patriots, il jama, no serant jama critica le president de l'époque, G.W. Bush, et insultant et menaçant même de cette façon qu'ils maintenant se sont comportés vers President Obama. Le lâches hypocrites de la way et le sheeple, c'est les petits bagages Republicans et tout le propos, repos, pouvant servant et bob. These phony, what I'm saying is these phony Republican patriots, they would never ever dare to criticize then-President G.W. Bush. What they're doing with that road sign you're talking about, they're saying where they're living under a corrupt Stalinist regime. They would never, ever dare to criticize then-President G.W. Bush and insult and even threaten him in the way that they now have behaved towards President Obama. What hypocritical cowards. It goes on from there. But that's thanks to Yahoo Babelfish for the translation.
Don't you love Babelfish?
I do. I took my French... basic French studies there at Harvard Extension School and a Spanish course there for a year. I've forgotten most of it, but they're beautiful languages there. And
right. Well, computers are just a doggone handy, Brian. I mean, I remember being in eighth grade, and me and my buddies had to go to the trouble of learning American Sign Language for the deaf so that we could swear in class.
Right.
It's much easier just to punch it into a computer.
And another thing, you got me up. This is what these Missouri people that put up that billboard sign, what they really stand for. It gets right back to, I looked that up there that day a few weeks ago. You told me to look up the Houston plan during the Richard Nixon administration. These are the silent majority, quote unquote, that Nixon always wanted to appeal to, the racist and the sheeple of that time. The Houston plan was a 43-page report and outline of proposed security operations put together by White House aide Tom Charles Houston in 1970. First came to light during the 1973 Watergate hearings headed by Senator Sam Ervin, God love him, a Democrat from North Carolina. The impetus for this report stemmed from President Richard Nixon wanting more coordination of domestic intelligence in the area of gathering information about purported left-wing radicals and the anti-war movement in general. Houston had assigned as White House liaison to the Interagency Committee on Intelligence, a group chaired by J. Edgar Hoover, then Federal Bureau Investigation Director. Houston worked closely with William C. Sullivan, Hoover's assistant, in drawing up the options listed in what eventually became the document known as the Houston Plan. Called for domestic burglary, illegal electronic surveillance, and opening the mail of domestic radicals, quote-unquote. At one time, it also called for the creation of detainment camps in western states where anti-war protesters would be detained. It goes on from there. But you're right about, and that's the Houston Plan, that kind of right-wing fascist state, and corporatist state, it would, I guess, be even more so nowadays. That's what the people that put up that billboard signers, that's what they really favor. They don't favor anything to do with the American founding patriots and their founding constitution and our founding documents and our Bill of Rights, all of that. They don't want a thing to do with that. Unless it could be somehow,
That's the one thing, Brian. Anytime you hear some right-winger talking about our founding fathers the drill. Anytime you hear any of that, you know that what's going to follow is a bunch of made-up crap.
Right.
Because they live in a world of strictly of their own imagination. It's like that piece that David from Tennessee sent me from The Onion the other day about man willing to die for what he imagines Constitution to contain. And the thing, my point was that, gosh, it's going to be, it's getting more and more hard to tell what's satire and what's reality.
And the same with their phony attacks on Acorn, the great patriots there that they have registered legally and gone beyond the letter of the law to report anything that's a bit out of the question of and millions upon millions of minority and lower income voters that they've given them their franchise, their right to vote. That's why the Republican fascists hate them. So, but these phony. I keep a copy of Mark Chrisman Miller's book, Fooled Again. It's got cases and the real case for electoral reform. There's great information there about Acorn, too. It's just all of the election theft is the real problem of the whole election process. Now this ES&S is going to take over basically all of the national voting process. The computer company there, I believe they're one of the ones that are run by Christian Identity Movement.
Or founded by, yeah.
Right-wingers, yeah, like the Odell guy that promised Ohio in 2004 to GW. These people are incestuous. They're the real sickness and corruption on our current American state and regime. I stopped. I'm going to boycott Cafe Press because that's where they print out a lot of those T-shirts, I guess.
Right. And we're moving.
Psalm 109 thing that they changed their mind and decided to reissue them or to start selling them again.
And you know, we had a listener write to them, Brian, and they wrote back and sent the same press release that they had decided on further review. It's like something out of the NFL. On further review. Yeah. They had decided to keep the T-shirts up there that were advocating murder.
I know. I was talking to you the other night about they get away with that and this disgusting showing up with the guns and the AK-47s apparently, the assault rifles there in Arizona there at an Obama town hall meeting there earlier this year, and yet at the same time, I told you about this story that the peaceful elderly lady there, a protester in this area of Washington, that it's near Microsoft and Boeing there, a very well-off neighborhood, and the secret, her sign there that says "Love America, Impeach G.W. Bush," the Secret Service man has the automatic rifle locked on her as the limousine drives by there, like, you know, the tank they have today, the tanks for that crazed self-protecting paranoid G.W. Bush, who's afraid of his own shadow, I would say, a Vietnam War hero and et cetera, that I don't remember the Viet Cong were infiltrating the Texas Air National Guard at all during that war, and he goes off from there to Harvard Business School when he's AWOL and then a deserter. Only the rich can get away with that in this country, and
I
have more faith in Missouri being that the show-me state, Bob, of Mr. Truman there, President Truman, that they would not fall for this crap from Republicans.
It's a different Missouri now. Even the Missouri of John Danforth, who was a Republican, but occasionally had little moments of sanity.
That's right.
Even that has been replaced. You know, this is the Missouri of John Ashcroft.
This is Danforth backing up Clarence Thomas. I really respected him basically as a good Republican, a real moderate, a basically civilized person there as Senator Danforth, but no, not John Ashcroft. Oh.
Right. He was and the state is chock-a-block with those loonies now. Kit Bond and Chris Bond and
they have the, in Columbia, Missouri, I'd still arguably I believe it was, at least after the last few years, the School of Journalism there in Columbia, Missouri, the best school of journalism and college level in the nation.
Yes.
At that state university there in Missouri, I don't know what's the entire country. I guess you could say as Missouri goes, so goes the country. And the live free or die comment, despite my being a military veteran, all that nonsense, I believe I'm more with the George Carlin bit there about where he makes fun of the live free or die. You know, but he thinks America. That was back in the more laid back early 1970s. He says, I think Idaho's slogan, famous potatoes, is much more in thinking with the average American suburbanite. You know? And I'll go along with that. Potatoes are good. They're good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. I'll let you go there,
Brian. All right, Brian, wonderful conversation. I wish you a great weekend.
you too. Bye bye, right. Mountaineers.
Well, we try, but, you know. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's our buddy Brian in New Hampshire taking umbrage to having Live Free or Die co-opted by a bunch of right-wing Republicans who don't know anything about sacrifice. This in from Jude. She heard Brian refer to his difficulties, and she said, I find Brian to be extremely knowledgeable on a variety of issues. I don't find him ill, as he made reference to himself at the start of your dialogue today. He's just so profoundly aware of the massive swamp we're in, great at research, and filled with righteous anger. Thanks for providing the time for Brian to verbalize. I always learn from him. Peace, Jude. Thank you, Jude. Jude always is such a point of affirmation. Juanita pointing out, if Brian gets the History Channel, they have some great World War II footage and stories on every night this week. They're mostly in color, mostly newly gathered together. It goes from the German front to the Japanese with personal stories. They're on into the early morning hours, up at least until 2 a.m. And, yeah, I haven't gotten to watch any of that, but I've seen I've heard a number of comments about it. Hopefully it'll come back around again and I'll get a chance. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, Bob. How's things going on the front porch Friday?
You know, it was a lovely day today here in the hills in Hollers Reverbo, and it's just a delightful, not too cold, just a crisp autumn evening on the front porch.
That's really wonderful. So I guess everything's fine then.
Oh, sure. Why not? Yeah. Well, I mean, except for. Yeah, see previous 71 minutes of program, but yeah.
Well, everything's fine here. So good. I'm glad that everything is.
I mean, you're still living in a state that's partially represented by Virginia Fox, but yeah, I mean, apart from that.
Yeah, it kind of makes you, when things are fine, like they are, it does kind of make you grateful for the freedoms that we still enjoy.
Absolutely. We're all just fine. Everybody's fine.
One of the freedoms that I'm glad I still enjoy, and I know your listeners probably do too, and I know you do, is the freedom to have the choice of corporations to bend over for.
Absolutely.
And I really...
What kind of country would this be if we were all getting screwed by the same corporation, Reverbo?
That really represents...
I mean, that'd be like communism or something, right?
That's what America is all about to me. It's having the choice and really the freedom, to just pick exactly what corporation I want to roll up my sleeve and bend over for. And I'm worried, I know you are, that guy is going to just keep going to take that freedom away. And I don't know what I'm going to do. What exactly do these people, how far do they go with this? Do they ever think that they or somebody they love, I don't know, might have a stroke or maybe get cancer or something like that? Do they ever think about that? This so-called base of the conservative base, I don't think they're particularly well off.
No, they're not. They are what a buddy of mine once referred to as the cannon fodder in the culture wars.
Pretty much. They're getting taken for a huge ride, and they can't afford the ticket at all. I just wonder what do they think about when they're not being told what to think. I ought to know. I live with them.
But it's, you do, and I do, and, but you're left, you really are left wondering. And, I mean, it's like that prepare for revolution business, and live free or die. Does it ever dawn on one of these people that somebody might shoot back?
That is a great question.
Because, see, that's the whole thing. In this whole bloodthirsty eliminationist rhetoric that is just washing across this country, Reverbo, I think there's an unspoken assumption that, us liberals are just going to stand there and sing kumbaya while they mow us down.
Or,
and then once they've got all the liberals out of the way, they can have the They can have that Ward Cleaver constitutional framer government that they know that the God Almighty give to them.
Or you'll see, once the shooting starts, people will start coming over to our side because we're right.
Right, but of course our buddy Marty wrote in earlier when I was talking about that and said, the way it works out, if outnumbered, be a better shot.
I just realized I said when the shooting starts.
That you did.
Is that funny?
You didn't say if.
I didn't?
No, you said when.
That's what we're talking about? I don't remember growing up in a country that we used to talk about this kind of thing. Even in a funny way.
No.
I remember people shooting at students at Kent State. I remember things like war. We still got those going on. I remember, nuts running around, taking people out here and there. But I don't remember this guy. I don't remember billboards saying, let's just start shooting.
I don't either. I don't either.
I don't think that's going to get a better. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say it's a process that's been a while in coming. And it starts with the John Birchers, and everybody knew that they were insane. But every now and then, I remember when I grew up down in Alabama, there was a radio station down there that played the John Birch Society report every day with a guy named Alan Stang, who was their commentator. And it's, one of those things that's just, I wish it wasn't on a brain cell, but it is. This is Alan Stang. Think about it. And, everybody was a commie. Richard Nixon was a commie. Gerald Ford was a commie. Everybody but them were commies. And so there was some of that. And then along comes Ronald Reagan with his hate the government but love your country. The mental disconnect thing going on.
Right.
And from there, it's Ronald Reagan, and he sort of merges into Newt Gingrich, who puts a contract out on America. And then you're here. And there's billboards calling for armed revolution.
So there's this absurd nostalgia, this bizarre nostalgia for what? I don't quite understand.
I don't know if it qualifies as nostalgia, Reverbo.
I mean, 150 years ago, I guess they're nostalgic for that.
Well, they have been. You live below the Mason-Dixie line. Somewhere along the way, you've seen that little front bumper tag or the little bumper sticker that says, it's got the old rebel soldier with the Confederate battle flag over his shoulder, and it says, forget hell. Or maybe you've seen one that says, the South will rise again.
I've seen them all. But it seems to me that they're being, there's this just weird sentimentality for this world that never was. I mean, are these people, are they nostalgic for those peaceful and prosperous Bush years? Where we weren't involved in any wars, and we just had jobs aplenty. I mean, think about this.
Yeah, there were so many jobs in the Bush years that several people had three or four, and George called it uniquely American.
Is there a parent running around, talking, well, what is your plan? Your plan is for more, give more tax breaks for people who don't need them. And I'm just thinking, hey, man, we should be up to our necks in employment by now. That shit's been going on for 30 years.
You'd think, but then again, I live in a state where we've been promised that coal was going to bring prosperity to West Virginia, and they've been promising that for 120, and we ain't seen it yet. But it's all, and I'm not trying to over-localize it, Reverbo, but it's all of the same set piece.
Mm-hmm.
Promise, promise, promise. It's all what Joe Hill was writing about when he, when he came up with that song, great labor organizer that he was, when he said, Live on hay day by day. There will be pie in the sky when you die. And he was writing that about the Salvation Army people. But the fact of the matter is, those are the people who turned into these people. And they're definitely the people that our parents warned us about.
Well, I mean, also, there's no surprise that they're evangelical types, because after all, what is religion is pretty much just, it denies death, doesn't it?
Well, it glorifies it. It says that...
No, just don't die. We're not going to die. We're going to, there'll be an afterlife.
Yeah. Pie in the sky when you die.
There you go. We won't, no one will really die. Well,
nobody's going to have to eat their Brussels sprouts in heaven.
Well, except for the undeserved.
And they eat Brussels sprouts in hell.
except it's the stupefying ignorance of these people. And I, honest to God, they're just being taken for a ride into total subservience. And the cognitive dissonance must be stunning, except they're not stunned because they don't even get it. And I was thinking, how you do it? It really is easy to do this, and we're just lucky there aren't more of them. And I wonder, I don't know what their plan is exactly. There are very many of them. But they are armed and ignorant. Armed and ignorant. I like that. But you take a word like, it really isn't about freedom. It's not about any of this. I think it's just simply about bigotry. I just think the whole thing's about, like, welfare. Take a word, we just distort that word. Right? Welfare really wouldn't...
How long, Reverbo, until they push a constitutional amendment in the Congress removing the word welfare from the Constitution?
I'm sure it's on the table. But what to you and me and people who, you know, have actually stimulated our brains, you know, we associate a word like that with compassion, maybe, or you know, humanity or something.
Dirty words.
But they associate it simply with racism. Welfare,
yes.
Well, that's what you don't deserve welfare.
Well, it's like that radio conversation I heard driving down to Charleston earlier today about, you know, is healthcare a right? And and you know, the right wing host says, and I'm telling you, it's not.
Well, it sure as hell ain't for people who aren't white, male, and Christian. That's for sure.
Yeah, don't forget property owners.
And property owners. I mean, they always had that nice racist streak going. That's easy to exploit. But the key is ignorance. You got to keep people stupid. Like, so let's go back to that Jefferson thing, right? To maintain democracy. Informed citizenry, right? But the way the wing nuts, they, you know, democracy and corporatocracy are like, they do not mix. So we do not want you to be actively engaged in this.
Well, you know, here's another one of the right. Just if I may proffer a local example of the enforced ignorance for the. Oh God! For the 17th year in a row, going back to 1992, no, 18th consecutive year. See, I can't even do math, at least not on the fly. For the 18th consecutive year, next week is Christian Heritage Week in West Virginia.
Come on, everybody!
And here's part of the proclamation. For many West Virginians, public school days once began with daily pledge of allegiance, prayer, and Bible reading. The influence of Christianity in West Virginia is evident by her many churches and Christian charities, ministries, missions, and schools, cherished Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving holiday seasons, and a willingness of mountaineers to love thy neighbor as thyself. Of course, I can sort of put the lie to that with any time that my friends and I get together to protest the destruction of communities around here, because all that love thy neighbor as thyself business goes right out the window when the Massey Stripes show up and start threatening to kill us. You know, just say it, not yelling at you.
Everything's fine. Glad everything's fine.
Is that the influence of Christianity in West Virginia? I'd suggest that if we're going to have a Heritage Week, we probably need to have a pernicious influence of coal Heritage Week. In which, during the labor struggles, neighbor was turned against neighbor. I ain't joining no union. That's a bunch of communists. Versus, well, I want a better wage. I want to be able to work 5 days. I want to work 6 days a week instead of seven.
God, I just don't know enough about your state, but is there a whole hell of a lot to celebrate up there? It's just you.
There is a great line from a movie that I don't know if you have seen, and if you have not, I highly recommend it not only to you, but to everyone else in the audience. It's a John Sayles film, and he doesn't make bad film. And it's from like 1984, 1985. It's called Mate One. It's the story of the mine wars in West Virginia. And there's a line in that movie that probably ought to replace Montani Semper Liberi, Mountaineers Are Always Free, on our flag. And it is this. You ask, is there a hell of a lot to celebrate up there? The line from the movie is this. All we got in common is our misery. So the least we can do is share it. I mean, doesn't that belong? I mean, that's flag material.
Oh, man.
Translate that into Latin, and there you go.
Oh, boy.
Or Upper Aramaic or whatever. Some language that West Virginians are not taught to read anymore. I mean, once upon a time, Latin was taught in the public schools of West Virginia. Sorry.
Well, it was replaced by Bible study, I guess.
History of the Bible. We're not enforcing any religion. We're just teaching the history of the Bible. Granted, we ain't teaching the history of Buddhism nor Islam. That's that terrorist religion. Nor the Hindus, nor any of the animatronic religions of them American Indians. We're just teaching Bible history, talking snakes and moving rocks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, people wearing dresses and tall hats and red shoes.
Yep, there you go.
Because
we got a Christian heritage here.
Well, Bob, it's just a tool. That's all. It's just another tool to keep people, from asking too many questions. Well, I mean, honestly, I keep going back to this. Without sufficient stimulation, our brains will stall. The African great parrots will be smarter than many of us. And can demonstrate.
Yeah. Marty writes in line with the conversation we're having here, and he says, I remember shortly after the so-called American Taliban John Walker Lind was arrested, there was an edition of Bill Maher's show. It may have been just before he got bumped off and had to go to the premium cable route, and Anne the Man was part of the panel, and John Walker Lind's name came for discussion, and Anne the Man suggested that he and all the rest of us who oppose the conservatives should just be killed. You remember, don't you, says Marty. Anne the Man had said that if some of us were just taken out and killed, that we'd get the point piped down and fall in line. Marty says, I remember thinking that door swings both ways.
I'm starting to imagine this. I think there's a lot of people that would not be down with this plan and would probably put up a bit of a squawk, if I can go back to the parrot mode.
Yes. You mean not fall down, not get in line?
Yeah, and kind of not really appreciate it too much. This was not our idea of a populist, futuristic populist revolt. Is the world made safe for knuckle-draggers?
But ultimately, it's not a world made safe for knuckle-draggers, because the knuckle-draggers, Reverbo, are the ones who are most at risk, who are most left flapping out in the breeze. This is a world being made safe for corporate oligarchy. This is a world being made safe for corporatism. And we all know what corporatism's other name is now, don't we?
You know what that name is? It begins with an F, I believe.
It has to do with the bundle of sticks that the Roman lictors used to carry to beat away the crowds around the Caesar.
Well, I was thinking fascism. What were you thinking?
Fascism.
Fascinating.
Yeah, Foscase. The Foscase was a bundle of rods around an axe. And each lictor carried one of those over his shoulders. And they surrounded the personage, whether it was a consul or a proconsul, depending on what your status was, told how many lictors you got, which meant how many guys and how many bundles of rods with which to beat the plebes. Oh, and by the way, Parrot, David in Tennessee says African gray, but not smarter than the Norwegian blue.
Alex the Parrot was an African gray, and he was the smartest parrot I ever studied. what shape blue ones? I mean, there's some people that can't even answer questions like that.
I know.
The sad part is when you really look at their base, look at the base, if we hadn't given them thousands of chances to climb on board after all this time, and in other words, if I gave a damn about them anymore, it would be sad, and I wouldn't want to just, one more time, you want to pick it on this bus or not, but it's clear that they...
Train can't. Leaving the station, Noah closing up the ark.
They've made it pretty clear they want to be out there in the wilderness, and, well, I'm leaving there.
Well, I saw that email come in from David in Tennessee. And by the way, the problem with the Norwegian blue is it's forever pining for the fjords. Sorry. But I got an email from David earlier today, and I know that, I know that you maintain a rather fierce grip on what you try to call your optimism. And, wanting to believe that Obama's out there doing the right thing and everything. And just our conversation reminded me of this email I saw earlier today. David said, of course, I'll continue to vote for the man, but Barack Obama has proven to me he isn't simply being bipartisan to a fault. He's ruining anything that resembling a slightly progressive movement. But really, and this is the gravamen of his complaint, Dana Perino on a board of governors overseeing broadcasting? David, you just got a bell. You got the first bell of the evening, David. He says, the stupid little... Beep. Just finished a week on Fox News telling the world what Cheney, Rove, and Crystal told her to say, went all socialist on Barack Obama on the tube, and he rewards her with 100 large a year to poison Armed Forces Radio and all the rest? And David has a trenchant point. I mean, where is there a line, Reverbo? Is there some sort of demarcation point where we look up and say, when do you stop extending the olive branch and drawing back the bloody stump? I mean, under the 8 years of George Bush, tormented, tortured, and agonizing that they were, Reverbo, you never saw some liberal being appointed to, for Christ's sakes, he nominated Lee Greenwood to the board of the National Council for the Arts or the Humanities or,
If we can go back to more of the shooting imagery, nobody is ever going to give him a hard time. Everybody's waiting for the man to come out blazing, to come out shooting. We don't want to be shooting any, we want to pull everybody out of Afghanistan and everywhere else and we want him to come out with just blasting away. No one's going to give him a hard time for that. We're begging him to do that. I think we could have this. I think the legacy of Barack Obama could be that he was the catalyst for a real third party movement. What do you think of that?
I think you're right. Except for, my take on the viability of third parties in the current system.
Well, I would probably agree with you, but we also would agree that the difference between the two parties is almost non-existent.
It's almost non-existent because of the actions of one party and not the other. You know, David noted in his email, the only thing Barack Obama's outreach has bought him is an indictment of weakness by the ugly right. I heard it today. You know, I don't get out a lot, Reverbo, but I happened to be out at a time when I could hear what local, statewide wingnuts were saying. And I heard this statement that, well, in the past, you know, there were great statesmen who believed that there was a line in the sand you didn't cross in the name of partisanship. But now we live in a time when Barack Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi believe that there's nothing but partisanship, and they will rip this country to shreds to ram their socialized health care down our throats. And it's one of those alternate universe moments, Reverbo, because I was just, you know, checking traffic, okay? I want to make sure I'm not in the middle of a lane because it's astonishing. What? What? Pure partisanship? Please? Dana, and the very thing that I was thinking of right then and there was the President of the United States just appointed a woman who called him a commie to a National Broadcasting Board.
We almost have 1 year down in this administration and three to go. Maybe seven to go, but we know there's three more to go. And it's, you know, I'm still with him. But if he don't take the gloves off, you know.
Well, and that's what David said. I'll continue to vote for the man, but...
I mean, no, I could never possibly vote for... I don't think I'll be able to vote for a Republican ever again in my life. I doubt it. But this is just...
Wasn't it you that sent me an email the other day that said, "Man from Chicago, meet the man from Plains"?
Yeah, that was me. And then we have to meet the man from Connecticut because I think he really is the man. He will just never ever be president ever. But Ralph Nader, that guy has got it down.
Yeah, I have never heard Ralph Nader espouse an issue with which I disagreed.
Just check out. I mean, I've spent about 2 hours the other night on those inner tubes, looking at old campaign footage, old speeches that he was giving in 2008 and 2000. I mean, this guy. I mean, well, unfortunately, I am a sucker for the well-crafted sentence, and so Obama certainly has got those. He's got his, you know, he doesn't. But that sounds pretty good. But I'm telling you, Nader just... And this is a guy that just... Isn't
well, that's... But that's the thing. When you listen to Nader talk, what you're hearing... what you're hearing is real issues. I mean, a Barack Obama speech has pretty words strung together and beautifully delivered.
Yeah.
But, you go... But those speeches you're talking about with Nader, there's meat on the bones.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, Nader's no slouch, don't get me wrong, but I just, as far as, you know, making speeches, writing speeches, he just doesn't come off like a politician because he's not one.
Is that his fatal flaw?
I think his fatal flaw was that they hosed him. They don't want anybody, the system just will not tolerate that they're... I mean, they hosed him out of debates, and they
But see, what I keep saying about third parties, Reverbo, it's not because I don't like a third party or I don't want a third party. I don't particularly care for the libertarians. I'm more politically aligned with the Greens. But what I'm saying about a third party isn't because I don't want one. It's because the system itself, and not even necessarily because of the two parties that are in power at present, but from a systems analysis standpoint, if I may, does not admit of a third party. There's no room for a third party in the constitutional framework as it's developed, because the Constitution, and this is not that Ward Cleaver Constitution, okay, that the right wingers are fond of. The Constitution presumes no parties, none. You know, during the Constitutional Convention, George Washington was frantically inveighing against what he called factionalism at the same time that those very factions were developing around him. Alexander Hamilton on one side, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Aaron Burr on the other. And so the Constitution comes into existence with no mention of parties and a system whereby the guy who comes in second running for the presidency becomes vice president, and no mention whatsoever of whether or not there is a third candidate. Ergo, no mention of a third party.
Well, we can't presume that that the Constitution isn't a flexible. The Constitution also didn't envision rocket ships and.
No! It didn't.
I have trouble envisioning what it would be like too. I don't know what it would.
But also the other thing you're talking about in third parties. Is the failure to develop a base. And, of course, that part is controlled by the individual parties themselves insofar as, what you have to do to get on a ballot if you're not a Democrat or a Republican in the several states. There are arcane and Byzantine things that have to happen to get a third-party candidate on the ballot. And they're all tied to what you do in the chief executive election almost without fail. For instance, I think in West Virginia for the Mountain Party to remain viable, the Mountain Party has to get 5% of the gubernatorial vote. And so consequently, all the energies of the Mountain Party go into what? Getting 5% of the gubernatorial vote. So that means that you don't have a Mountain Party member of the legislature, you don't have a Mountain Party member of the state senate, you don't have a Mountain Party member of a county commission, you don't have a Mountain Party county surveyor, because all of the infrastructure is going into keeping it on the ballot via the gubernatorial. Do you see, am I rambling or does this make sense?
Well, then change it. Hold on a minute. Yeah, I know.
That's kind of zen. By the way, David, I'm told via email that David's tickled with his bell. A bell? Me? I got a bell? Again, I'm not worthy.
You got a bell. I mean, I don't know what to say about it. In Italy, there's like 13 different political parties, and they're a freaking mess. I don't know how you would do it. These are all, it's all in the details. But I just know that they make it basically impossible with all the restrictions on it. But if we did have one and things did.
Well, I will dare to submit to you, Reverbo, that if you want to see that third party develop, then the first thing that has to happen, and I think this is probably why it doesn't in so many instances, is that you have to have public funding of political campaigns.
There you go.
Because if you get the corporate money out, then smart people. And there's no doubt but what Ralph Nader's a smart guy. Maybe a bit cranky in his elder years, but a smart guy. Hell, I'm 46 and I'm cranky. What the hell am I talking about?
God, can you imagine what you're going to be like when you're like 70?
Yeah, well, I won't be get off my lawn. I'll just start shooting. Shooting and swearing. Man, there's another band name. That's like driving and crying. Shooting and swearing.
Oh, I like it, yeah. Well, it doesn't have to be Nader. Whether you like Nader or not, he's just
If you get public funding of political campaigns, you open up the political spectrum to people who might be able to solve problems.
Well, that and get more. Some people say term limits would go hand in hand with it.
I've watched for years now as the electorate have. Joyfully abdicated their role. When you look at a primary election in an off year, for instance.
But doesn't that go back to how difficult it is to get an incumbent out of there? And now we're back to election reform.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care what kind of Glenn Beck diagram one draws on the chalkboard. Sooner or later, it comes back to election reform. And oddly enough, I would think that this is something that the teabaggers could get on board with, too, because, you know, they want to get their insane people in. I want to get our sane people in. I want to put the crazy out, you know. And frankly, I'm enough of an optimist yet remaining to be willing to go up against, to put my sane guy up against their nut job.
If things unravel here with Obama, yeah, if Man from Chicago Meet the Man from Plants really plays out, I mean, people are just going to be so jaded this time. But that's what you're, that's what, I don't know what's going to happen then. Then we could just end up with the most repressive government we've ever elected in 2012. People just going to, there'll be no one will vote. Is someone talking to me who's under the age of three?
Yes, she is under the age of three, as a matter of fact.
Good call. I didn't know for that.
Oh, Loney gets a bill.
What's her name?
I call her Loney.
And does she, yeah. She speaks? You want the third party, too.
Yeah, she does. She wants a third party.
Not the kind of party we want.
No, she wants a third birthday party.
Does she, well, right now, she's going, I think she's, she and African Red Pirates are right on that same evolutionary scale.
I believe you're right.
She was going to overtake America. Because she has a daddy who, like, reads over her.
Well, she and we haven't seen her for a while, so she came back into the studio to watch, and it's just charming. I'm not Granddad, I'm not Papa, I'm Bob, and it's just cute.
Oh, that is cute.
Yeah, Bob's Eliza. That's what she's saying.
Ask her if she would be upset if she would give Obama, if she'd forgive Obama if he just started, he took the gloves off and came out swinging next year.
Hey, Loney, would you mind if President Obama just took the gloves off and came out swinging next year? That'd be okay, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Begging this guy to do it. Oh, God, yeah. Dana Perino. Hey, well, Timmy Geithner, Larry Summers. The list goes on and on and on.
You know, I'm sorry. I just put it under that broad rubric of bringing tambourines to knife fights.
I don't know. I'm somewhere in the middle of The Predator State by James Galbraith.
Oh, that sounds depressing.
Well, he's a genius. I mean, remember, we could have had him and Krugman and these people in the cabinet. Instead, we got Larry Summers again.
Yeah, instead, you know, we got, you know, we could have had... We could have had artisanal French bread, and instead we got Wonder Bread.
Yeah, but I mean, he just goes on here. He just completely trashes all of this, all this old economic policy. It's all been debunked. All the supply side economics have yielded no prosperity ever. The money never drifts down to you and me. It drifts on into another Ferrari. I mean, it's just this guy just. And yet, that's what we keep doing. And the Republicans keep advocating for more of this. Remember that Onion, the Onion headline that went when Bush was elected the first time? Long nightmare of peace and prosperity
is finally over.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. What are these people nostalgic for? They have absolutely no plans. None. They don't have a plan for... Like,
well, no, but you don't. I mean, but that is your plan. When your goal is when your anarcho-Randian goal is the pure unfettered capitalism a la Somalia, not having a plan is the plan. I mean, granted, we're being Zen again, but
I do follow. Yeah, sure. Having a plan is suddenly, hey, that's a rule, that's a regulation.
Right.
We don't need plans. Yeah, they should take a tip from the pirates. They've got that whole thing down to a science out there. They got that running smooth.
Yeah, the old, you know, the it's like Peter Falk as Vince Ricardo in the original In-Laws said, not getting killed. That's really the key to the benefits plan. Not getting killed. And that's the trouble with and that's the trouble with the anarcho-Randian the piracy model, because sooner or later. And you know, we've seen this movie before. as the great trusts that Teddy Roosevelt went after. It got bigger and bigger, and then there were fewer and fewer, and then ultimately it's, you know, mano a mano, and everybody, and an entire economy and an entire nation has involuntarily bet on the fight. That's why the trusts were broken. Not because there's something in, not because, you know, we liked one robber baron more than another. But because ultimately it gambles with the lives of innocents. And if somebody screws up that one, you know, screws up the one mega monopoly, then everything goes kaput. Because the one thing that the economists never seem to mention, Reverbo, is that the natural progress of capitalism is toward a mono economy and toward a command economy. You know, you've heard it said, if Walmart doesn't have it, you don't need it.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And as a consequence of that, we recognize that, yes, competition's healthy. Our dear friend, the Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman, is a hopeless devotee of Edie's ice cream. I'm a Breyers guy. And ain't nobody going to change either one of us.
But you know what I like, don't you?
Possum Queen?
No, we're close. Blue Bunny.
Oh, well, yeah, Blue Bunny's pretty good. Bluebell is good, too.
No, Possum, I was headed over to the fourth party, which would be the Possum Party, but we've left that constant.
I don't know that we did, but...
Maybe we never do. But on my way out of here, just remind that little girl that there are people in this country who are going to do all they can so that no bureaucrat comes between her and her doctor except some insurance hack.
Right.
So we will promise her that freedom if there's anything we can do about it.
Yes, she will. Right. The right wing wants to promise her, well... The right wing wants to make real for her that wonderful Kris Kristofferson line. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Keep it personal. Tell her to keep it personal, too.
I certainly will, Reverbo. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too, and we will catch up probably next week.
And we will be here, except for like Thursday and Friday.
Oh, I need to know this, because it's kind of hard. I sometimes listen to shows, and I'm sometimes unaware that they're reruns. And then there's that moment of kind of that embarrassing, do I take action? Do I want to call this show or not? And
Right. That's why I try to put in some sort of a date reference usually. So that
I don't mean to imply that all the shows are alike. But you will admit that our themes are usually...
Great. We do return to themes, yes. And they are all alike insofar as they're all hosted by me, and yeah.
There you go.
And the frustration remains a mathematical constant.
Yeah, it does. Well, except tonight, everything's fine, and I'm glad of that.
Yeah, everything's wonderful. We're all because that's isn't that straight out of the war room at the Pentagon in Dr. Strangelove? Yes, Dimitri, we're fine. Yeah, it's good to be fine, Dimitri. Ah, Dimitri, yes. I'm glad you're fine too. Well, we're all fine.
Everybody's fine. I think Dimitri was on like his 14th vodka tonic at that point, though.
There is something to be said for.
Yeah.
Although I have the typical preference for gin, but yeah.
Yeah, I used to that. Fortunately or unfortunately, but neither of those words is the one I wanted. How about this? At one time in my life, yes, I did subscribe to the idea that if one was delicious and great, then 19 must be that much better.
19 times better. Yes. Yes.
I sort of finally agree with that, but...
Well, I think we define adulthood when we finally find that place in ourselves where we can go, no, I'm not poor in number 13 tonight.
No,
That's called restraint reverbo.
Yeah, well.
And when we measure two fingers, you know, when you measure two fingers of liquor by running two parallel fingers along by the bottom of the glass and not sticking them vertically in it.
Or just forgetting the tonic.
Well.
It's always popular.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, that's the dry martini, you know, dust on the olive.
Oh, God. Now we're just corrupting that little girl. Oh.
No, fortunately, she's out of earshot now. No, I walked, they came to visit, and I walked into the living room, and the first thing I heard was, Bob!
Did you actually walk around your house and do your radio show?
No. Not at the same. No, we haven't advanced to the point where I've got one of those televangelist wireless mics on my cheek thing yet. No. But it's on the list.
Oh, I could. Yeah, definitely. We'll help you get that. As soon as I get, you know, as soon as we get those Republicans, you know, just have us drowning in jobs, you know, you'll have everything.
I know. And it's just, you know, prosperity's just around the corner.
That's right.
It's just that the corner's 9,000 miles long.
Right.
Hell of a corner, huh?
I got to go back to everything's fine. Okay, I'm back.
We're all fine. Everything's fine. I'm glad you're fine.
Have a nice weekend.
It'll be fine.
Here.
Bye, Reverbo. Critic at large, Reverbo, with a wonderful Friday night conversation. David reminding me, also another headline after Bush's election, the London Daily Herald, how can 54,679,318 people be so stupid? Major exhale. More oil cans for table three. Oh, sadly, we are all of too much alike mind. You know what? I gotta take a break. I'm gonna take a break, then we're gonna come back to the phones, I promise. So if you are on hold, please stay that way. If you have not dialed in, I got open lines for you should you wish to make use of them. But something Reverbo said during the course of our conversation just kind of got me to thinking. You know, that comment about, I never heard people advocating for armed revolution in the streets as I was growing up. Yeah, me neither. Which put me in the mind of this. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And we sincerely need your support. This is The Horn. Little piece of you, a little piece in me. Well,
oh! Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, one of the beauties of this program is having so many wonderful people of tremendous wit who are just on the stick, on the fly. And before I go back to the phones, just a beautiful example of that, and what more fitting day than Friday on the front porch for highlighting this. David from Tennessee referenced the how could 59 million people be so stupid actual newspaper headline from the UK, which was followed on its heels followed this from Marty, who was put in mind of it and immediately ran off and found it for the sake of, I suppose, continuity and just general delightfulness. Copyright 2000, Notice of Revocation of Independence. To the citizens of the United States of America, in light of your failure to elect a president of the USA and thus to govern yourselves, we hereby give notice of the revocation of your independence, effective today. Her Sovereign Majesty, Queen Elizabeth II, will resume monarchical duties over all states, commonwealths, and other territories, except Utah, which she does not fancy. Your new Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Tony Blair, MP, for the 97.85% of you who have until now been unaware that there is a world outside your borders, will appoint a Minister for America without the need for further elections. Congress and the Senate will be disbanded. The questionnaire will be circulated next year to determine whether any of you noticed. To aid in the transition to a British crown dependency, the following rules are introduced with immediate effect. 1. First, you should look up revocation in the Oxford English Dictionary. Then look up aluminium. Check the pronunciation guide. You will be amazed at just how wrongly you've been pronouncing it. The letter U will be reinstated in words such as favor and neighbor. Skipping the letter U is nothing more than laziness on your part. Likewise, you will learn to spell donut without skipping half the letters. You will end your love affair with the letter Z, pronounced Z, not Z, and the suffix I-Z-E will be replaced by the suffix I-S-E. You will learn that the suffix bur, B-U-R-G-H, is pronounced burra, e ergo gratias Edinburgh, lesson I had to learn recently. You are welcome to re-spell Pittsburgh as Pittsburgh. if you can't cope with the correct pronunciation. Generally, you should raise your vocabulary to acceptable levels. Look up vocabulary. Using the same 27 words interspersed with fill-in noises such as like and you know is an unacceptable and inefficient form of communication. Look up interspersed. There will be no more bleeps in the Jerry Springer show. If you're not old enough to cope with bad language, then you shouldn't have live chat shows. When you learn to develop your vocabulary, then you won't have to use bad language as often. Two, there is no such thing as U.S. English. We will let Microsoft know on your behalf. The Microsoft spell checker will be adjusted to take account of the reinstated letter U and the elimination of I-Z-E. Third, you should learn to distinguish the English and Australian accents. It really isn't that hard. English accents are not limited to Cockney, upper-class twit, or Mancunian, Daphne and Fraser. You'll also have to learn how to understand regional accents. Scottish dramas such as Taggart will no longer be broadcast with subtitles. While we're talking about regions, you must learn that there is no such place as Devonshire in England. The name of the county is Devon. If you persist in calling it Devonshire, all American states will become shires, e.g., Texas-shire, Florida-shire, Louisiana-shire. Four, Hollywood will be required occasionally to cast English actors as the good guys. Hollywood will be required to cast English actors to play English characters. British sitcoms such as Men Behaving Badly or Red Dwarf will not be recast and watered down for a wishy-washy American audience who can't cope with the humor of occasional political incorrectness. Fifth, you should relearn your original national anthem, God Save the Queen, but only after fully carrying out task one. We would not want you to get confused and give up halfway through. Sixth, you should stop playing American football. Seven, you should declare war on Quebec and France using nuclear weapons if they give you any murd. The 97.85% of you who were not aware that there is a world outside your borders should count yourselves lucky. The Russians have never been the bad guys. Merde is French for shit. You will no longer be allowed to own or carry guns. You will no longer be allowed to own or carry anything more dangerous in public than a vegetable peeler. Because we don't believe you are sensible enough to handle potentially dangerous items, you will require a permit if you wish to carry a vegetable peeler in public. And so on. Delightful. Simply delightful. And like I said, just... I just love the way this program works. And I love the way you guys contribute. So, to the phones, we go. Hoping that you guys have hung in. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Gene?
Well, it's funny you should kind of mention that the English thing there, because... I got a couple of things going on now. On the bad side, I just got my insurance turned down my new seat for my chair.
Oh, for heaven.
So I'm a little sick. oh, man. Actually, I'm a lot sick, but, you know.
Was there a rationale given or just, you know?
Well, actually, I called in and probably... They've already gone home for the day because I didn't catch it until like 4:30 or 4:40 in the afternoon. But they'll probably give me back. They'll probably call me back on Monday and let me know why. regarding what you said about Ribble, he said he didn't remember people talking about Armed Revolution when he was growing up.
Right.
I do.
But you grew up
in Michigan, believe it or not, in a very Christian home.
Right, but it's still it's also Ted Nugent's home state.
Yeah, that's true. So, and I suppose that's why. So, when you think about it, that's kind of scary. and it's funny that you should mention the English bit because here's the nice thing if I can scrape together the money and get the passport all turned in, someone was kind enough to say, I'd like you to spend some time with me in the UK.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So, it won't be right away. Like I say, I got to get the money together because flying to the UK ain't cheap. I might ask if I can live under the porch. and they can just kind of pass me Netflix and pitch chips into the when nobody's looking.
Don't forget the vinegar.
Oh, yeah. Got to have the vinegar. Got to have the vinegar. But, you know, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm just, you know, I'm a little bit sick.
And by the way, I should mention, Gene, that in case you were ever wondering, yes, there is a ramp on our virtual front porch for Fridays. So.
Oh, good. You know what? I hadn't thought about that. It's not in the picture. I'll put it in.
Yes, so, there's a ramp.
Oh, good. Because there's, I know there's a virtual brown or a metaphorical brown jug, which I could really get a swig of.
Yeah, wait, every now and then, yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of gotta.
Yeah, it just kind of feels that way. Anyway, I won't keep you because I'm sure you got more people on the line, but I had to call in because, you know, I know that I bring a lot of personal crap to this show, and I'm sorry, but sometimes it's...
This whole show... You? Me?
Well, yeah.
This whole program is therapy for me. So, you know, no, don't apologize.
Well, honestly, actually, but, you know, I get your point. So I will hang up and let the other patient, the other clients, go in and get...
Oh, he'll be here all week, folks. Yeah, you're on a roll tonight, Gene.
Well, I'm only being silly because if I'm not silly, I'm going to scream. Anyway, I'll go find my shade jacket and...
Don't forget the purple crayon.
Calm down. Yeah, God has a purple crayon.
Yep.
Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
All right, later, Gene. Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Gene calling from sunny Oregon.
It's Richard, Bob.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
Ah, frustrated. But I was thinking of you. First of all, I have to, following Gene is such a pleasure. I keep on, when I hear his voice, I keep on thinking of him being dunked, to baptize?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Gene told us that story where he was a vicarious baptism for some dead guy.
Yeah, I thought it was a whole bunch of dead
guys. Oh, yeah, well, he was. Yeah,
over and over.
It was the whole agglomeration of the dead.
Yeah, like James Schmidt, plop.
Bloop.
You know, Susanna Jones,
bloop. Yep.
And, you know, I was...
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, bloop. You're a Mormon now.
So I was in a Vietnamese supermarket a couple of days ago, and I thought, oh, I should call Bob. Food porn.
Yes. Oh, there's great food porn in the Vietnamese market.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a Vietnamese-owned market. It's actually part of a chain of Oriental supermarkets.
Oh, there's got to be all kinds of good stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I went to the farmer's market today, and there are a lot of people from the Central Valley coming to Richmond and, you know, sell their wares one day a week. And a lot of these people are, you know, from Laos and Vietnam, and the stuff they grow is just awesome. You have to learn what it all is.
Oh, and those beautiful Southeast Asian basils.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, lots of things like that. So anyway, I'm calling. I was at a managed care commission meeting yesterday, and of course the topic of swine flu vaccine came up. Our CEO said we got to really take this seriously and, you know, push aside all the scare stories about it, because we've had 12 people die in our county.
Ooh.
From swine flu. That's pretty sobering. And the last one was just a week or two ago. So we gotta, you know, we gotta take this real serious. And I realize there's this issue about mercury.
As a preservative, it's called thimerosal.
Yeah, that does concern me. But, boy, I mean, we're at a point where it's we have to weigh, you know, we have to weigh this and say, well, which is, you know, which is the worst of the evils. So I guess I'm going to go for my own shot.
And there are, I guess there, unless I'm mistaken, there are single-dose shots versus multi-dose shots, and if you get the single dose, you don't get the thimerosal.
Well, no, we're just talking about the single dose. we managed to set aside, we didn't wait till the last minute. We stocked up on the vaccine early. So we're not in, we do have to triage who gets it.
According to need and according to risk.
Exactly.
But, of course, your right-wingers would say, well, see, they got them a death panel and they're rationing the health care already. But the fact of the matter is, it's the corporate providers of the vaccine who did that. Am I incorrect?
Who did which?
Who made it such that individual communities have to triage who gets the flu vaccine first because they did not produce a sufficient quantity thereof.
There was some problem with a bad batch of vaccine that had to be tossed out, and that's probably what created the shortage. I'm not sure I'm 100% on this, but I recall reading about this a few months ago. So what I'm picking up, too, by the way, is that there will be enough vaccine for everybody in the country. It just won't be available right away.
Right, it's not overnight available. Right.
Yeah, because the vaccine producers have to catch up. So that's the state of affairs. And I brought up the question about individual states, single payer, as a possibility, and our CEO said, "Don't even think about it; it's dead." However, you know, and I got in a dig at George Miller at the same time. And apparently there's some other senator that's been putting this forward, that states can do their own single payer. Do you know anything about that?
It's had more than...
Somebody like that.
I'm not sure the actual name, but I know that Kucinich is not the only one who's been pushing it.
Well, I'm feeling extremely frustrated about Miller, and I'm getting so paranoid about politicians right now. I'm not in a rational mind about it.
Well, I don't necessarily think, and this is certainly no clinical statement, but I don't necessarily think what you're describing is paranoia. I think what you're describing is a response based on empirical data that you have received over a significant period of time that tends to indicate that given the opportunity, most politicians will find a way to do the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's true. My whole life, in fact, but it seems somehow worse. Well, I guess looking at the healthcare issue is really putting, a big, nasty brown halo over the whole thing. I mean, I'm looking at the corruption that's so rampant in our government and thinking, how in the world are we going to be able to overthrow conflict of interest?
And I don't know that you overthrow it. I think right now for those who are trying to get some sort of something done, it's not so much overthrow it as try to figure out how to do an end run on it.
Talking about health plan? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What you said.
Yeah, but like in general, our everything. How would I put it? You know, I think if we look closely enough at these wars, we're going to find corruption underneath it. You know, if we're able to follow the money. And you see, I was. I was in Connecticut when Nixon got elected, and Connecticut won for Nixon. And I was in college there, and I was wondering, how in the hell did this happen? And then I started reviewing what had been going on in Connecticut. In other words, looking at how the economic situation affected how the state voted. And what had been going on was that manufacturing had been leaving the state for one reason or another. You know, it had been moving to the south, or it had just been vanishing. Connecticut was a state that had quite a bit of arms production. Winchester.
Sure. Connecticut Valley Arms. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget. And then United Aircraft was a really big employer in Connecticut. You know, they made Sikorsky helicopters at the time. They made Pratt & Whitney jet engines for fighters and bombers. And it's like every and there was the electric boat company. The submarines were all being made.
Right. What, Groton?
Yeah, in Groton, exactly. And so, I mean, I knew that there were buses coming in. Chartered buses were coming into Pratt Whitney, which is in East Hartford, all the way from the middle of Massachusetts. You know, long, long ride. And these were happening on shift changes. So there were typewriters. That industry was headquartered in Hartford. And may have had something to do with Mark Twain's living in Hartford. If you remember, he had invested in...
Ultimately, it was his financial ruin.
Right, right. But see, I think he had Royal and Underwood.
Smith. Well, wasn't L.C. Smith and Corona there as well?
I'm not sure. I don't know because...
And again, a little-known fact, Richard, in addition, you know, we think of a Smith Corona typewriter, or those of us who still remember what typewriters were think of a Smith Corona typewriter. But L.C. Smith and Corona was also a very well-known manufacturer of firearms.
Really? No, I didn't know.
Made some fine shotguns. Really good field guns.
Well, it's, oh boy, I have a whole other story about that. But the thing, you know, now, Hartford, Connecticut is the insurance capital of the United States. And then the area around Greenwich is, commuter, you know, this is where, very, very expensive homes, country clubs, and that's it. They commute into Manhattan for their work. And rubber, the Naugatuck River Valley in Connecticut, the city there is Waterbury, and they traditionally made tires, so it's more of a blue-collar area. So the state is pretty diverse, but it may start to explain where Lieberman's buttered.
Oh, without a doubt.
You see? Because what happened is all these companies vanished. You know, Danbury, Connecticut was known for hats. That's what they made. And the city where I lived was the American Thread Company, Willimantic, when I was going to school. So all these industries vanish and they leave, and what you have left is two things. You know, munitions and insurance, you know. So I think, and Lieberman's mushy way of speaking is a regional accent, by the way.
Is it really? Everybody up there sounds like Droopy Dog?
Well, my stepfather did. Not the nasal, you know, not the whining. That's unique to Lieberman.
Okay. I was going to, because, you know, I don't know how anybody could spend more than 5 or 10 minutes in the entire state. I mean, state of Connecticut, if everybody was whining like that, because whining.
That's his own thing. But that mushy speech pattern is regional.
Yeah, kind of like it's too much trouble to open the mouth.
I don't know. I'm a New Yorker. You know, I grew up in the same borough that Kevin lives in. And so, to me, it was distinctive. I pay attention to sound. I'm very hooked into sound.
Yeah, you and I both. You and me both.
So, but anyway, you know, the thing is, I try to understand where, you know, why people behave the way they do. And you know, hopefully we'll be rid of Lieberman. It's so disgusting to me. I come from a Jewish background, and Lieberman just revolts me.
Well, isn't there? I mean, and I'll ask you and other Jewish listeners. Isn't there something fundamentally un-Jewish about Lieberman's attitudes?
You know, I don't know, because I'm happy to say I didn't get very many good things from my parents, but one thing I did get from my parents was atheism, and I'm very pleased with that. So I was not bar mitzvah, and I didn't go to any Jewish schools. So, my background, in fact, is in humanism.
No, that's a beautiful thing.
Huh?
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, my background was ethical culture. I was there at the age of six. So I am not a good person to ask about this, because it seems to me, what I'll tell you is this, I am aware of two distinctly different Jewish traditions in the U.S. in terms of politics and social social consciousness. There are very conservative Jews, and there are very liberal Jews. And I see that the think about the garment industry in New York,
mm-hmm.
and the what was that union?
The ILGWU.
Yeah, International Ladies Garment Workers. See, the way I see it was that you had rich Jews who owned the factories and poor Jews who worked for them. So the poor Jews were being exploited by the rich Jews. Okay, and when you think about when I think about social consciousness, we have a bunch of very committed Jewish people, who are really devoted to social change. And these are liberals, and they, these were the people who went and got their heads busted, in the Freedom Rides. Okay?
Right. So far, so good.
Okay. And then you have these extremely conservative Zionists and elitists. And they're sure not going down south because of any commitments. They just couldn't care less. So maybe that shed some light on this. As you probably know, as far as Jewish religion goes, there are three distinctly separate branches, and they don't always see eye to eye. There's the Orthodox, there's the Reform, and there's the Conservative, who are in between the two extremes.
And where do the Hasidim fall in?
They're off in a world by themselves. I see them as something like the Church of Armenia. It's like the Church of Armenia is not part of the Orthodox sphere of influence. They're off by themselves.
I never think of the Church of Armenia, but yes.
Yeah. Well, they're there, And I grew up around Armenians as well as Italians, mostly. So I have fondness for these people, except for the Sicilians who kill you.
Well, you remind me. There's a radio personality and there's a radio show out there. It's one of those morning zoo kind of things.
Yeah.
It's called the Bob and Tom Show.
Where is that? I never heard.
They're out of Indianapolis. They're pretty good. A lot of good comedy and so forth. But the Bob of Bob and Tom is of Armenian extraction, and He loves to do this bit where he says, "Did I ever tell you about my recipe for making Armenian chicken?" Of course, the answer is no. He says, "Well, here's the recipe: first steal a chicken." That's not me. That's him.
Yeah. Well, I see there's different kinds of Armenians too. So, I mean, Lieberman is bankrolled a lot by conservative Jews. And by reactionary Jews. So
And by reactionary, you mean that Israel Uber Allah's crowd?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I've had a hard time with this. I had to finally figure it all out, you know, as who's who. By the way, there's an anti-Zionist movement among Jews.
Oh, yes, very much so.
You know, it's like, for me, am I a Zionist? Well, yeah, in a strange way, because I'm a little bit scared that fascism could come back, and, you know, it's...
Well, see, I think you're working from a bad premise or a bad verb tense.
Okay.
I'm a little bit scared that it has.
Well, that it could get worse. Let's put it that way. So, you know, in my most paranoid moments, I feel like, Jesus, you know, I might want to go someplace where I'd be safe. But on the other hand, I agree with you that the best solution to the Israel issue is to hire Walt Disney and terraform Baja, you know, and put all the Jews there and call it Israel. I mean, this is just not worth... It's not worth fighting over that thing the size of New Jersey. It's ridiculous. That's a whole other thing, and I think I'm at great odds with my relatives, which is why I don't have anything to do with them.
That will do it. Makes Thanksgiving right tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very complex, but it's probably no more complex. I mean,
let me back up 1 minute. If I had somewhere around here, I mentioned Thanksgiving coming. If I had somewhere around here I could buy a fresh kosher turkey,
yeah,
I would. Because I would then be guaranteed, or at least I think I'd be guaranteed, because there just aren't a hell of a lot of rabbis in China, that I was buying an American turkey that there would at least be a 50-50 chance had not been raised on toxic waste.
Are we being sold Chinese turkeys now?
You didn't know, did you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's why country of origin labeling was so important and why people like Walmart fought it tooth and toenail.
Yeah. Well, I'm...
You know, I can't help it. It calls up things like the great Christmas dinner scene at the Chinese restaurant in that wonderful chestnut of a movie, The Christmas Story.
Oh, it's Gene Shepard?
Yes. You know, where the Bumpuses, who are alleged to have come to Indiana from West Virginia and have brought like 9,000 dogs with them, and the dogs get into their home and steal the turkey that that Darren McGavin is salivating over all day, and they wind up having to go to the only place that's open on Christmas Day, which is a Chinese restaurant, where they have Peking duck, which comes to the table complete with neck and beak.
Well, you remind me of an incident. I must share this with you. My mother was always very suspicious of storekeepers. And one day she sent me, there are these ethnic women in my area. It was mostly Jews and Italians. And they would give the shopkeepers such a hard time, you know, they would accuse them of ripping them off. So my mother sent me to a meat market for chicken. It was under the L. And I went into the place. My mother had said to me, "Keep your eye on Morgan Stern. He puts his thumb on the scale." And I was a kid. You know, I went in. Oh, my mother trusted me to buy some chicken. And I go up to the counter, and I... watch carefully. He puts the chicken on the scale. I watch. He says, What are you so suspicious about? See, I'm not touching the scale.
I'm not touching it.
Yeah. So then he went and he cut up the chicken and he started wrapping it. And I said, "Hey, wait a minute. You charged me for that. You waited with the head and the legs on it. Then you cut them off and you're throwing them out." He said, "Look, kid, you want the head and the legs? I'll give you the head and the legs." I said, "Thanks.
Thanks.
sent me out to buy some vegetables, and I went into this vegetable store, and, you know, the women were just giving the guy such a hard time. Stop that! I don't like that! It's too much money! I'm going somewhere else! You know, they're driving this guy crazy. And I go up to him, and I said, "Mister, would you please give me a pound of nice tomatoes?" So he goes, he picks out some tomatoes. And I'd like some nice peppers, nice ones. So he goes and he picks out some peppers. You know, I'd like some nice onions, maybe a pound and a half. So he goes and he gets stuff. And I go home. My mother looks at all the stuff that I got. She said, "How'd you get such great stuff?" And all I did was just trust the guy, you know, and felt some sympathy. So I think there's a lesson in this.
I had friends once upon a time, and this is too, it's almost too stereotypical.
Yeah.
But it was related by them about one of their loved ones as a true story. And of course there were horror stories about her cooking and everything. They were Jewish. And the story was related that she would go to the bakery and always bought the broken cookies. And that one day she went in and there were no broken cookies. And she said, "Where's the broken cookies?" "Well, we don't have any broken cookies, you know, because that." And she said, "We'll break some."
My father, by the way, used to get broken ice cream cones.
You know, I love that culture. I adore it, and I hate the fact that this country has been so polarized as to take away those beauties.
You know, I've been thinking about this lately, and what I like about living where I do is the tremendous diversity of people and what they bring. And I think that America has a true greatness, but we don't know what it is. And the greatness of America is the diversity of our people.
It is our fundamental strength, Richard. You know, if you have the humility and B adventurousness. You know, I guess it's the antithesis of the Star Trek thing about boldly going. No, humbly go. To go and go into a non-corporatized little restaurant in a neighborhood, and actually, you know, eat the food and say, you know, don't bring me the menu. Tell me what you guys eat.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. I mean, the first time I ever sat down and there was a bowl of schmaltz on the table.
Really? Where was this?
It was at a delicatessen in St. Louis.
Okay.
And I was like, what the hell is this? And well, you know, I have an ongoing love affair with fat anyway, so.
Yeah, let's translate this for people who don't know. It's chicken fat.
Yeah, rendered. And magnificent. And the same applies to a wide variety of other dining experiences. You know, trust, you know, you talk about trusting the greengrocer, you know, trusting the sushi chef to give you the good stuff when you're
really?
when you're a little redneck boy from Alabama and you just want to try it.
Oh yeah. I mean, people react with pride to this sort of thing. It's honor, you know. When you're trusted to, you know, to do something good for the customer, I think there's a tendency among a lot of people to really pull out the stops in response.
Because it's a manifestation of cultural pride.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing that I noticed is that in a lot of cultures, there's healthy food and there's unhealthy food.
Oh yeah.
One form of, for instance, Jewish unhealthy food.
Schmaltz. Schmaltz.
Well, yeah, but it's much worse. It's called stuffed derma. Derma meaning skin. What it is it's a sausage, but there's no meat in it. It's breadcrumbs with grease and seasonings.
you know, way back when I worked at CNN.
You know?
Yeah, way back when I worked at CNN, I remember covering a story in the spring of the year with Passover coming up, and it was a press release out of, and I was just calling to get an interview, you know, just a sound bite to use at the kicker at the end of the broadcast or the end of the newscast. And it was a press release from Cedars Sinai, from Cedars Sinai, you know, medical center.
Yeah.
And it was just a press release warning elderly Jewish men to lay off the bitter herb. Because you know, really, really pungent, strong horseradish can induce cardiac arrest, they had found out.
Oh, I had no idea. Yeah, but so, you know, for me, it's...
You know, have a bite for tradition's sake, but don't lard it on.
Well, so my dream, I mean, we have you know, high number of ethnic people in this county where I live, and my fervent dream is for us to put on a healthy ethnic food festival and make it a road show and take it all around the county. And you know, this is my dream. I've walked into one Oriental restaurant. There's a Chinese restaurant in the city of Richmond, which will just turn people, you know, blood sugar into just utter hell. I mean, there's a...
Yeah.
There's carbon fat and, you know, traditions in the black community, and that's, you know, it's mostly black people who patronize this place, which is a Chinese restaurant. But we've got a lot of diabetes, you know, as hell. It's an epidemic all over the place. So I'm really interested in, you know, in getting our people more healthy. Don't just wait.
and that's you know, that's the whole fraud, Richard, behind this idea of, well, anybody can have health care in America. All you do is go to the emergency room. Well, you know what? They're not teaching wellness at the emergency room.
Oh, that's...
Because the emergency room is predicated on emergencies. And when somebody's clutching his chest, that's not the time to do the wellness teaching about laying off the schmaltz.
That's true. That's very true. And besides, our doctors are not trained in nutrition. And that's a crime in itself.
Oh, Andrew Weil has gone on about that ad infinitum, and he's 100% correct.
I agree. I agree. But, you know, it's turning the system around. It's such a Herculean task.
Well, it is, and that's what frustrates me so much, Richard, is the sooner we realize that it is a Herculean task and that it cannot be done by half measures, and that you can't just re-caulk the boat and have it just putter merrily along, then we'll begin to make some progress. This incrementalism that seems to be winning the day in the Congress is not going to lead to anything, because, you know, some people say, well, you know, it's a valid first step toward universal single payer. And I say bull. Because every time we start something, the Repiglicans come along and do everything they can to make sure that it doesn't work.
We're sure seeing that now.
Well, we see it with everything. You know, the reason that there are problems, name a program, is because all along the Repiglicans have attacked it in their ongoing, relentless pursuit of proving that government programs don't work.
Yeah.
You know, I believe it was Brian from New Hampshire a few nights ago who mentioned, you know, Social Security. Remember Al Gore talking about the lockbox?
Yeah.
All of a sudden that lockbox looks like a pretty damn good idea after the 8 years of George Bush, right?
Yes.
You know, but the Repiglicans made fun of, oh, Al Gore wants the lockbox. He wants a chastity belt for Social Security. Ho, 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 ho. Damn fools. You know, there was a district court ruling that came out, and it was with regard to a case involving a limited number of plaintiffs, but it came out in whatever district the southern part of Louisiana sits in, and it was a lawsuit against the Army Corps of Engineers relating to Katrina. And the federal judge just lit into the Army Corps of Engineers.
Oh, this was just recent, right?
Yeah, last couple of 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And
and you know, didn't, and it's, and there, you know, the Army Corps is not a function of the failure of a, of government. It's the deliberate institutionalized, bureaucratized, enforced failure that comes when Republicans get into office and start dismantling things.
Yes, 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 yes.
And we see it time and time and time again. And socially, it's their divisiveness. You know, it's that idiot Marsha Blackburn saying she doesn't want bureaucrats getting between a woman and her health care decisions, and yet the anti-abortion bill has never been brought up that she didn't try to vote for twice.
Where's she from?
Tennessee. She's the Republican the Republican idiot who isn't Michelle Bachmann. They're like I don't know, they're the Veronica and Betty of Republican politics. One's dark haired, one's a blonde. You know, they're both idiots.
Well, that returns me to the topic that I spoke about a few minutes ago, and it's so big, let's not talk about it much. But corruption. How will we overthrow conflict of interest? How are we going to do it? I see it as the center of so much trouble here.
Somewhere along the way, you have to simply go about the business of writing legislation that punishes it. I've said for years that, you know, if you really want to clean up,
and who's going to support it? I can see Kucinich doing it, right?
Sure.
But is my Miller going to get behind it?
I don't know.
You know, I mean, this is. I am feeling so spun around. It's like I get pissed about Dianne. It's very easy for me to get pissed off about Dianne Feinstein because when I was a city employee, she dissed us. We had a strike in San Francisco, a citywide city employee strike. It probably had something to do with pay parity. And she was on the board of supervisors. And I was a picket captain. I was a shop steward and a picket captain, and I was out there in the freezing rain, striking where I work, which was the City College of San Francisco. As a matter of fact, I came down with a fever. And Dianne Feinstein, you know, we had members, an FEIU, we had members who were licensed vocational nurses, and they worked at the huge hospital, the city's hospital. And what Dianne Feinstein did was she ran out, she did a photo op. She ran out to the hospital with a bunch of reporters and made beds. So I have a...
So among other things, she crossed the line.
She what? Yeah, exactly.
Hey.
Exactly. And she calls herself a Democrat. And by the way, the licensed vocational nurses, of course, are mostly women. And the women had supported her. You know, it was a feminist issue. And then she turned around and stabbed him in the back, which, you know, she seems to have a habit of doing. So you know, I have this feeling. I like to be mad at Dianne Feinstein. So I did some digging around, and, gee, she doesn't look so bad, you know. Look at her voting record. She pulled a flag desecration stunt a couple of years back. But then I look at her voting record and I say, gee, it doesn't look so bad. Why do I hate this woman so much, you know?
And but the war profiteering is a problem.
With her husband?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, her voting record isn't that, you know, it's not sterling, but...
Yeah, but hey, I remember when Barbara Boxer went and campaigned for Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, that's very strange because Boxer has been really good. I mean, she's been much more progressive than Feinstein.
So right, but that just goes to show the clubbishness of the Senate, Richard. You know, they sit down and they, you know, they have lunch together and you know, Joe said, did you see last week's edition of American Idol? And Barbara says, oh, I did. Wasn't he wonderful? And yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, it's not blood will tell, balance sheet will tell.
Yeah, I know. It's very troubling. So, you know, you brought up this thing about Miller voting against Kucinich's amendment, and I called his office 3 times about that. I never got an answer. I got bullshit PR releases, you know, boilerplated letters.
Yeah.
To me. No answer. And he sent out...
Yeah, you got the Hello Cleveland letter.
And I got these pieces about, you know, what he was doing about healthcare. Remember, he's in charge of this committee, and you'll see him standing behind Obama in photos these days on healthcare. So he's been sending out these mailers, you know, fancy things on healthcare, and public option is almost never mentioned.
Oh no.
And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on with him?
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of people, Richard, who subscribe to that Bill Clinton thing, where he, you know, because Bill Clinton has been saying, listen, it's not going to be perfect. You can't pass a perfect bill. Don't expect to pass a perfect bill. Just pass a bill. You will not get another chance.
What do you think?
I think I'm too much of an idealist for my own good.
That's the problem with us.
but you know, without seeming flip, Richard, somebody has to be.
True. I agree completely.
Because it may be politically convenient to check off a box that says we did health care, but unless it alleviates those 45,000 needless deaths in this country every year, it ain't health care reform.
That's really true. And I don't like what I'm seeing. I really, really don't. It looks like a huge giveaway to the insurance companies.
Well, it doesn't look like it. It is one. I mean, this kind of blows me away. A little quote found it over at BartCop.com from John Conyers. I don't know if you saw this or not. Quote, I'm getting tired of saving Obama's can in the White House. Whew. You know?
I'm sorry, who was this?
John Conyers. You know, and there's another guy that wants single payer.
I do.
I mean, he's introduced H.R., well, what was H.R. 676 at one point, maybe still is. You know, Medicare for all, pretty simple. You know, the Republicans are having a fit about a 4,000, Jesus, it's a 2,000 page, wait, it's a 3,000, no, it's a 4,000, it's a 50,000 page bill!
And by the way, I want to...
Well, you know, Medicare for all is a 2-page bill, maybe a 1-page bill.
Yeah, good point. Medicare needs propping up as well because, yeah, it's single payer, but don't forget that Medicare does not cover everything.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
You know, and people who have Medicare have to buy it.
But if you want an incremental move towards single payer, then the incremental move towards single payer is Medicare for all.
Right.
Not something where I have to provide corporate welfare to Cigna. You know, my God, Richard, I've got a story here that I didn't get to in the stack, but this is a wonderful place to mention it. A story of a little boy named Benjamin French who was born with his right arm missing below the elbow. He's 12 years old. In 12 years, he's had 7 prostheses because, like most little boys, Benjamin French is growing.
Yeah.
His most recent prosthetic arm replacement will cost nearly $30,000. His doctor says he'll soon grow out of it, but his insurance company says, and that would be Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, too damn bad. You don't get any more. You not only have grown out of all your prostheses, Benjamin, you've grown out of all of your lifetime coverage.
Oh, boy. I am...
Last night, it was Cigna refusing to cover the little 5-year-old girl who needs ear canal implants by the time she's 7, or she'll never be able to properly speak, and Cigna said, tough, go to hell. Now, how many of these stories do we have to have, Richard, before we look at the insurance companies and say, you are corrupt, you are filthy, you are immoral, you are amoral, you're psychotic, you're sociopathic, and you're done?
Throw those money changers out of the temple.
Yeah, take the cat of nine tails to them. Hey, Richard, I got to roll. We're right up at the end of it, but it's been a wonderful conversation and good to hear from you.
Yeah. I'll try to remember to call more often.
All right.
When you're on, I always remember when you're not. Okay.
So okay. Hey, I'm here Monday through Friday.
I know.
All right. See you, Richard. Bye now.
Bye.
So that's the program for the evening. If you are still on hold, my apologies. We'll crank it up again Monday evening. I promise. If something's just burning you up, be here Monday evening. It is about 3 minutes before the hour. It's time to go. Have a wonderful weekend. Remember, all Foxed Up with John Fox on Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, Rick Smith and the Rick Smith Show comes your way over the weekend. New shows both Saturday and Sunday. I will say at the very end that we are in dire straits. We significantly need your help. Way past halfway through November and nowhere near halfway to November's goal for what it takes to keep the horn going. Remember, we go month to month. What happens in November determines whether there's a December for the horn. What happens in December determines whether there's a January. I don't like living this way. I don't like working this way. And I know it's got to be frustrating for you. But it is the world that we deal with right now. It's the way that we deal with things. Because, you know, the deep pocket liberals out there, they can't control this content. And therefore, I guess they have no interest in making sure that this content persists. So if you want it to persist, it's up to you. And we are in a deep, deep hole. So if you can hit the PayPal button, it would be much appreciated. And thank you on behalf of all of us. Thanks as ever go out to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the hardest working man in liberal talk. What most of you know is liberal talk exists because of Ben Birch and his determination with White Rose Society. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. News coming about some things that will be happening, and I'll share it with you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net.
And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, what do you say we start with some funny tonight? And you know, it's in the nature of humor, something of which I've made a lifelong study, although not a lifelong success. It's in the nature of humor that it's funniest when the person being funny don't know he's being funny. So, this is one of those cases. And as is so often the case in politics, if you want funny without realizing they're being funny, rather akin to, say, John Stewart pointing out Texas Representative Louis Gohmert having a snack while talking about the coming apocalypse that will arise as a result of trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York City, I have another offering. Out in Mormon land, otherwise known as the state of Utah, remember the state that had to outlaw bigamy in order to become a state, yeah, that Utah, they have, golly, Ned, this is just too beautiful. They have a state senator out there named Chris Butters. And Chris Butters, and that's Butt-A-R-S, B-U-T-T-A-R-S, Chris Butters, don't like the gay people much. He has described this guy apparently has a talent. One, I don't know, maybe the angel Morani gave it to him or something. He has a talent for saying things like recently he said that gay men and women are, and this is a quote, the greatest threat to America going down. Yeah, really. I mean, and that's just one of them. He said, I believe they will destroy the foundation of the American society. In my mind, it's the beginning of the end. Sodom and Gomorrah was localized. This is worldwide. And he can't explain that verse from Ezekiel that says that the real reason Sodom was destroyed was because of its want of human decency in terms of how it treated strangers. Last year, the state senator Chris Butters drew the ire of decent human beings when he spoke of a controversial bill thusly, this baby is black, I'll tell you. This is a dark and ugly thing. Don't know what cave State Senator Chris Butters lives in, but he can always be counted on to satisfy. You know the old some of my best friends are fill in the blank here with the name of whatever hated group you hate the most. Some of my best friends are. Well, this is one of those. And like I said, there's nothing like starting Front Porch on the Friday with a funny. Sit down. Strap in.
I meet with the gays here and there. There's in my house 2 weeks ago. I don't mind gays. But I don't want them stuffing it down my throat all the time. And certainly in my kid's face.
No, of course not. Of course not. I meet with the gays here and there. Minneapolis airport restroom, perhaps, Senator Butters? Nah. They were in my house 2 weeks ago. I don't mind gays, but I don't want them stuffing it down my throat all the time. Certainly not in my kid's face. I'll bet you this guy's a teabagger. Ooh, that was too easy. Just a giggle. Just a giggle. It doesn't really matter. You remember last night when I opened the program talking about this, these revised recommendations by the Preventive Services Task Force
about mammograms, and I said, you know, there's just some things I wish it didn't happen at the timing that it happens with, and you know, we could do without this. Well, prophecy update. You know, that's the trouble with prophecy. You never, even if you've got your worn-out purple robe with the frayed cuffs and the half-dangling moons and stars around them and the eight ball with the crack in the bottom that persistently says, answer hazy, ask again later. Even if you've got all that, sometimes you don't exactly know the power of your prophecy, and such is the case with me. I found a post by our old buddy Jurassic Pork over at his blog, Welcome Back to Pottersville. That's welcomebacktopottersville.blogspot.com. And he's got a little bit of insight on one of the people who made that recommendation, you know, about mammography and breast examinations. And he notes that Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, came out and denounced the report. And a little bit of information in what Kathleen Sebelius said. The U.S. Preventative Task Force is an outside independent panel of doctors and scientists who make recommendations. They do not set federal policy, and they don't determine what services are covered by the federal government. My message to women is simple. Mammograms have always been an important life-saving tool in the fight against breast cancer, and they still are today. Keep doing what you've been doing for years. Talk to your doctor about your individual history, ask questions, and make the decision that is right for you. And so, up there in, I think, Massachusetts, where Jurassic Pork is, he did a little bit of what we like to call journalism and reporting on what just exactly this panel is. He says it has 16 members, two nurses, and a researcher. But of this 16-member panel, there is not one single oncologist. Not one. There is not anyone on this panel with a recorded history of ever having treated cancer. However, the panel does include what he refers to as the ironically named Dr. Diane Pettitte. Sorry. Oh, the 13-year-old juvenile sense of humor of my son has begun to rub off on me. Oh, please don't make me say that name again. But who is she? Besides having a really funny name. Oh, come on, Bob, quit being 13 again. You know, I read through this just fine a little bit ago. This didn't happen to me. Woo! Oh, I guess one of the reasons I'm laughing is because,